Welcome to episode 11-3 of the Tech Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me today is the She-Hulk and Cooking Mama coveting Sean Nola Kirkland.
I believe you mean the She-Hulk dressed as Cooking Mama coveting.
Rawr. And also with us is the voice of reason amidst this chaos and confusion, our very own lawman to sort things through, Jeremy Lamont.
Let's get ready to rumble. Are you gentlemen ready to rumble?
We are. So let's get the show started, shall we?
We shall.
So I wanted to jump into Sound Shapes. It's a title which Sean Nola likened to the IKEA of platformers. Is that a correct paraphrase, Sean?
Yeah, I just meant that. And keep in mind, this is just from playing it at events and stuff. At the time, I had maybe an hour and a half of time in on it. Oh. But it just seemed like a very, this is a platformer, mm-hmm. and we are using sort of, you know, kind of hip, sterile aesthetics, but it was basically just there's nothing really to it.
Well,
you know,
yeah, I think there are definitely moments in the game where your description is spot on. But before we get there, let me give a little context to the title for those who maybe haven't experienced the game. The main component is this platformer with a very simple premise. You avoid anything that's red. Now you don't have much in the way of a offensive arsenal. You can stick to walls and holding down either the square or. You all right there? Did you fall?
Yeah, one of my.
I need a bandage.
One of my soundproofing panels fell down.
And I could hear it.
Yeah,
did not work.
Did I? Yeah, obviously it's not very good soundproofing. Continue.
Okay, anyway. If you hold down the square or R1, both on PS3 and Vita, you forego your sticky ability, but you can travel much faster, about twice as fast, which is useful if you want extra distance for a jump. And kind of bringing this all together, unifying the levels, is this album motif. There are six different albums, each with their own, as Sean said, kind of a sterile, kind of 8-bit hipster visual style, and also a musical artist. And the game's hook is that enemies and some of the environments, they kind of groove to the beat. In one of them, you might have this red cloud that grows in size every time there's a drum beat or there's a platform that toggles to the, you know, 4/4 measure. And so I'm halfway through the campaign, and some of the levels definitely are grabbing me. They're fun, and considering that they were made with the tool set, which I'm going to talk about in a second, that is impressive, but occasionally I just find myself really bored by them. The second album has artwork from the Super Brothers, and it seems to offer this critique on corporate culture. At least that's what these they're like these pixelated businessmen who are blowing their brains out tell me. And on some of the levels, there's just so little adversity, both in a lack of red and they give you infinite lives, that the game really doesn't offer too much tension. And I know, you know, you're probably thinking, I'm not a fan of limited ammo. And, you know, we've discussed on the podcast, the dwindling timer kind of makes me uncomfortable. But I do kind of see and feel the effect here. Many of the levels, they just don't have enough conflict. And when it does show, which is later on with the case of the Beck levels, then I think that Sound Shapes can be a little bit more gripping.
Yeah, that was one of the things a lot of people were like, well, it's, you know, the type of game I can just put on and chill and relax to. And I thought, you know, there are games like that, like Flower, that mm-hmm. I can really get behind. But this is a platformer, you know, and platformers aren't really relaxing games. It's right. Just kind of, oh, there's no threat of me losing. And that's not relaxing. It's just kind of silly.
Right. But I do think it really shows, whereas Flower was kind of consistent, I do think there's some inconsistency there. And that makes the levels without adversity that much more kind of boring for me. Because there's some that definitely are a little bit of a challenge there. They do seem to, there's one that kind of reminds me of Donkey Kong Jr., like going up and down vines and things like that. And so that makes it all apparent for others. But beyond kind of the main game, if that's all there was, if that was the main game, you know, and that's all Sound Shapes was, I'd be pretty dismissive. But instead, each level kind of rewards players Little Big Planet style to the tools of the master's house. So jumping into the create a level, it really kind of gives way to this flexible editor that's just wide open and allows you your imagination to really run wild. Like any of, you know, the play, create, share, or any construction set title, I honestly had more fun building levels than playing them. And that's kind of the same thing for me, that same hook that Little Big Planet had. And I think being able to share and download levels that other people create really kind of elevates sound shapes.
Yeah, I've heard that is the best aspect of it. And for me, you know, like good for them, but that's
not you.
Yeah, that's not me. I didn't enjoy Little Big Planet. I didn't enjoy Mod Nation Racers, and
yeah,
I don't see myself enjoying this.
That's kind of the fundamental difference between you and I, and maybe for the listeners. Like, if you do get your kicks out of building levels, then, you know, grab it. And if that bores you and you think, why am I paying for the privilege to build them, then you might want to stay away. The one thing I want to mention is that creation works much better with the PS3 controller than the rear touch pinching on the Vita. It's functional, but it's really awkward for me, because not only do you have to rear touch, and rear touch when you're grabbing things on the screen just doesn't work for me, because unlike touch where you're actually, you know, making that point of contact that's visible, you're kind of, you know, behind the screen, and it doesn't always work for me there. But I don't know, when you consider that for PS Plus customers, they get both iterations for $12, I think it is, you know, a comparative deal. You know, it has me enjoying my Vita again after, you know, maybe a month-long absence. I probably put at least 10 hours designing level. So, and I still feel like I'm learning and getting something out of the game. So for $12, worthwhile.
I think the sale price is over. I think it's actually back to 15. I think it was just the pre-order that it was 12. But
you know, the Play, Create, Share, 15 isn't a deal killer.
Yeah, I have to eat a little bit of crow on this, because I think it was just the last podcast where I had said, oh, Sony and their Play, Create, Share, so much for that. And then even though, I mean, they haven't been branding this as that, it is in fact a Play, Create, and Share game. And I found it interesting that everything is organized into the albums, like you said. I haven't played this, but I understand that when you beat a series of levels, you collect a vinyl record, I guess, that is representative of that level. Is that right? Something like that. You're collecting records. Yeah. And you mentioned Super Brothers. I think Beck has some levels in there. I understand Woody Guthrie has some levels. No, it's not Woody Guthrie. It's Jim Guthrie. Jim Guthrie.
Arlo.
Yeah.
Folk mix.
There is a little bit of a difference there. Yeah.
I do like. I'm not a huge Beck fan, but I thought the Beck levels were really interesting in that they really connected the distance between or the difference between the sound and the visuals, where they had things on screen, they had the lyrics kind of popping out, and things really kind of moved to the beat, much more than the corporate levels. The Super Brothers levels pretty much bored me, and I didn't really get, maybe because I didn't get what they were trying to say.
Those Super Brothers are preachy bastards,
are they? What is their thing? What is their?
They're clan. I don't know. I think they're made up of some guys in Canada. Up with the. They're really good friends with the Cappy Games, Capybara Games. They're famous right now. Their thing was Sword and Sorcery. I'm not sure how exactly you pronounce that, but I didn't actually play that either. I've got it downloaded. I just haven't played it. I don't really. It's some kind of adventure game. But I actually have a couple of questions for you about sound shapes. You mentioned a few different kinds of levels. I thought it was neat that the lyrics are there. I didn't realize that there was a lyrical component to it at all. But I'm wondering about the different styles of music. I mean, it sounds like there's kind of some variety there. It's not all chiptunes. What are we looking at in terms of different kinds of music?
Is, but one of the things that they kind of based it on was, if you've ever used one of those music editors, and when you're in the creation mode, you'll kind of see this grid, and when things kind of move along, and when you're in the creation mode, you will put things in the grid to make the notes, and it's very sample heavy, in that as soon as you go through every level, you're hitting certain junctions, you're hitting certain points, and those are additive, they add to the music. But after a while, that motif of additive, it gets a little bit tiresome. And so you can definitely hear, like, here's the sample, they're adding this, they're adding that. And so there's a little bit of repetition if you kind of focus on the music. But not chiptune, you know, very kind of sample-driven.
So if you don't focus on any one specific thing, it's okay.
Yeah, pretty much. You take the whole, you take the bad.
That's interesting. Did you guys see, just recently, kind of off topic for a second, did you guys see the thing about the guy who used Beaterator to make 365 different songs every day of the year? And
Wait.
I listened to yeah, Beaterator, the Rockstar Games.
Yeah, I got that for Sean for Christmas. Was
And
that?
he did it on the PSP. I think there's an iPhone version, but he did it on his PSP.
Wait,
And
Beaterator, the one with
Timberland.
yeah, Timberland.
Yeah.
T Tim Timbaland, you guys. Come on.
Sorry,
Don't be
sorry.
so white. Can't believe it. So anyway, that was kind of off topic, but the thing I thought about that was neat was I listened
Sorry,
to a few
Tim.
of this guy's songs. I listened to a few of this guy's songs, and they all sounded different, and I found that really interesting. So I was kind of interested in this sound shapes to see if it did anything different. But
The quality of the music.
they were pretty bad, but they, I mean, you know, it was, but for something that the guy did on his freaking PSP, it was awesome. It was really awesome. Maybe I'll link to it somewhere in the comments or something. I thought it was really neat.
John, have you any songs? Guess not. I'll take those now.
Play, create, and share didn't quite do it for him. The other question that I had, one last question, is the thing that I've really been interested in seeing with sound shapes, and I really should probably pick it up, but whenever a music game comes out, everybody always talks, and this has been all the way back, you know, people will say, you're really making music when you play the game. Like there's this creation of the music and the playing of the game, and they are married together, and it's, you know, you can't separate one from the other. And even going back, I mean, the game that this is Queasy Games, right? Jonathan Mack, I think, was the main guy, and he had done Everyday Shooter before, which you know, on the PS3 and PSP, and everybody had said, well, you know, you're creating music with this, which, you know, I guess kind of, but there are mostly just like sound effects whenever you shoot something, like if this one makes this sound effect and that one makes that sound effect, or like you know, even Q entertainment games like your Luminous or your Meteos,
Sure, yeah.
where
Been
and I never really, like, okay, I could kind of see the argument maybe that maybe you're making some music, but it never really felt like really,
Well,
you
I
know.
think yeah, I think for many people, I don't know, at least for me, when you talk about making music, I have this concept of you have this beat or you have this song in your head and you're able to articulate that. And I think there are programs even on console like Beaterator and stuff like that, some of the Xbox Indie, there are some kind of grid-based creation tools. But this one, it allows you to tweak kind of pre-built songs, and so you know a lot of those things, you can kind of tweak it, but you're not really building it from scratch. And so, therefore, I really never got that sense that you know, the musical sense that here I was building something. But then again, in this one, there is kind of, you know, the ability. I saw a level where the guy created the song, much like Little Big Planet. He created the Mario Brothers song in there. So as you walk through it, you know, it played the song.
And
And
that's like Little Big Planet. One of the things that got me out of Little Big Planet is you load it up and it's like, all right, what are we gonna do? Oh, it's a bazillion levels of just, I made the Star Fox theme, I made the Mario theme, I
And
made
walk
this.
through, yeah.
You know, but you can choose though. Like, I never held that against it because there are some great original levels and original content that's out there. So
Oh, there were, and
if
from
you
what I
if I mean if all you
understand,
want
the
to see
second.
is
Well, the second one I understand filters that stuff better too.
So anyway, I was just kind of
Epic
curious
opened up a
because.
little bit more from the rigid platformer. There were some shooter levels and stuff like that. They weren't very deep, but they definitely opened up the genre a little bit more.
So Deagle, I challenge you to get some Woody Guthrie music into Sound Shapes. And are those guys even related, by the way, Jim Guthrie and Woody Guthrie? Is there just like a Guthrie? Is there we have a Guthrie gap from with Canada?
That is a question I cannot answer. I
Don't
have
forget Steely Guthrie.
You guys are blinding me with obscurity tonight. But
Bashful Guthrie, Grumpy Guthrie, Sneezy Guthrie.
yes, all the
Killed that one. Let's move on.
Yes, let's move on to Dust, an Elysian Tale, which is TAIL, little play on words there, which was kindly offered up for
Wait,
review.
is it actually TAIL? Because I changed it to that in the outline.
It is TAIL. It's a furry game.
Whenever I see it, I want to spell it TALE. But yeah, Sean, you corrected me. Thank you. Inadvertently. So Dean Dodrill, aka Humble Hearts, I was talking to him, had a brief Twitter chat. And initially he thought I was the Robert Allen who did the music for Jazz Jackrabbit 2. I didn't. So yeah, but he offered me a very warm and friendly guy, offered me a couple of codes anyway. Leave some comments in the show notes and you'll get a possibly win a code for Dust, an Elysian Tale, T-A-I-L. Anyway, I think it's getting a good amount of press for one reason, and that's it's being the product of a it's the product of a single person. And while Dust is undeniably, I think, impressive, and I'm floored by people not only like Dean and Nathan Fouts, Jason and Matthew over at Zona, and like the gang at Megadev, these really small studios who create, you know, these exceptional games that really resemble something from a large team. I can't help but think that reviewers, they're going to champion the underdog. And while there's nothing wrong with that in an overview piece, I do think it brings up an important question in criticism, which reminds me of like Robert Rodriguez's first movie, El Mariachi. Does it deserve, you know, additional merit just because it was the work of a very skeletal crew in a tight budget? And I think some might say yes, but others might just look at the final product.
I think what it comes down to is if you look back to your Super Nintendo and right. you think of a game like Plock or the Stargate game for Sega Genesis. I'm just like throwing out some mediocre games here. And if I told you that those were made by like a dude, would you want to go back and play those, or have you already made up your mind about it? I think the difference is that now we have all this information, mm-hmm. and any game that comes out, you got to throw as much information about it as you can out there. And so we get caught up in the stories of how these games are made that it does affect people's outcome of the final product. But a couple months from now, when you just look it up on on PlayStation Network or whatever and decide to download it, you're not going to care. You're just trying to find out if it's good. And if you're clouded by the fact that there's a great story behind it, behind how it was made, I think you're doing potential consumers a disservice.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I think as an overview piece, like right now it's great, but is criticism probably not. I don't know. Jeremy, how do you feel before I move on, talk a little bit?
I agree with what Sean's saying. I mean, I guess it sort of depends on how you want to look at it. I mean, if you want to look at it as just an experience, you know, I think there's definitely from an ignorant consumer standpoint, somebody who doesn't care and just wants to play the game for what it is. I mean, I guess there's an argument to be made there that those folks will probably enjoy a mediocre game, you know, as much as a, you know, a high quality one. But I think there's definitely something to say about a person who, as an individual, can have a vision, realize it, get it out there, make it something functional, a final product that somebody can make. I mean, that's how a lot of these guys, you know, got started now. And I mean, look at indie. I mean, indie games, quote unquote. I mean, they're a big deal now. I mean, and just for the last few years, it's all been indie this and indie that. And you know, personally, I don't know these guys myself, but I think that something that comes out, you know, like an EA. You know, I could name any one of a number of EA studios putting out a product mm-hmm. versus something else that one guy put out that I could spend an equal amount of time and get a good, you know, enjoyment out of.
Sure.
I think there's definitely something to that. I mean, I find it very, it's a very interesting topic, and I had never really thought of that before. And
if we watched, you know, set and watched Indie Game the movie, and I think it's, you know, the personalities and you know, hear what 3-4 stories of guys kind of overcoming adversity and just putting their lives on hold just to create something, and they're kind of championing that notion there.
Yeah, I mean, well, there are great games from studios and mediocre games from studios, and I think that if you're an individual person who can, or you know, even just a few guys who can bring something all the way through that process, I think that's something special, and I think it deserves some attention.
Well, I think it comes out to it comes down to consistency of the channel to bring you that information. I feel like there's a difference between giving criticism of games and giving stories of games. I feel like so this is kind of a stretch, but bear with me. When I was in college, I took a class that was essentially just the history of Nickelodeon and what sort of you know, nuclear family issues you could kind of extrapolate from the history of Nickelodeon. And you looked at Rugrats, and you looked at episodes of Rugrats, and you looked at why that was made. You know, what year was this put out? What was the social climate? Mm-hmm. What had changed between the last season of Rugrats that made them have to add this or take away that and things like that? As opposed to TV Guide, which would have just put up a thing saying, hey, this season of Rugrats is A-OK, 3 stars, your kids are going to love this shit.
Right.
And I feel like there's a consistency there, right? Like TV Guide is never going to say, hey, man, you know, this episode of Rugrats, it's They added this one character because parents wanted to see more African Americans in their children's shows so that they would feel more comfortable in school, and that's good on them. The writing's a little poor, but they did a good job with that, and it's because of these reasons, and we're going to give it an extra star because of that, because that's not TV guy's job. That's the academic's job. And so likewise, in class, you're not going to say, yeah, you know, they changed all this stuff. They added a bunch of extra religions to focus on tolerance, but yeah, the writing's really poor, so we're not going to go over those in class. It's like, no, because that's not what that's about. And I feel like, so for example, for tech gaming, if we're going to focus on Dust as a story of the development, then that's how we need to cover Street Fighter Cross Capcom or Gears of War. You know, yeah, there is a consistency there, and I feel like that's the thing that people have a hard time overcoming.
Right. I'm with you. I see it, to use a different metaphor, as kind of the Sunday edition of the paper, where they talk about things a little bit more in depth. They don't have that, you know, I got to turn out the review the next day. And so there's a little bit more thoughtfulness. They've had, you know, ideally a week to interview people and to really deliver a story rather than, you know, just a straight review. Is this worthy of your time or money? So anyway,
and I think there's a kernel of a story no matter which way you go with it. I mean, whether it's one guy, I mean, he's got his story. You could look at the, you know, I thought I heard you say Street Fighter. I mean, Yoshinori Ono has his particular vision or something that he brought to it and the way he thought the game should go. I don't know that we necessarily need to conflate the two, and I don't think that really happens all that often. I mean, I'm not sure that, you know, maybe it does, but you know, that's a great point though too, because I guess, you know, Robert, you were not all that taken with Sound Shapes, for example, but I've been seeing nothing but, oh my God, Sound Shapes. And I was talking about this the last episode, or maybe it was the episode before, where all of these little indie cred people kind of get together and they're like, oh my God, this game is so good. And then I get it and I'm kind of like, oh, you know, it's all right.
Yeah.
So maybe there is some of that, but I don't know that, I mean, I don't know that there's necessarily a problem with the fact that you can cover the story of a the creation or the conceptualization of a game versus the value that it has as a product.
And well, the people who are really championing Sound Shapes made that decision 2 years ago. You know, I'm going to call Shane Bettenhausen out for this. He might not be the right person since he works for Sony now, but he's been pushing Sound Shapes since it first got shown at E3 when the Vita was announced. Like, and that seems to be a pretty common thing. People who said this is the reason to buy the Vita for, you know, 2 years ago, they really did not want to be wrong. So they're going to tell you it's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
So you're saying that they're being, you know, disingenuous?
No, I think that they put on those rose-tinted glasses, and I think, I mean, it's just like when a new Monster Hunter game comes out for me, right? I'm not going to tell you
what
to add.
Yes. That was exactly my point, is that we all kind of do that. I mean, it's not that we decide. I mean, maybe we do. I mean, maybe we decide and come up with the reasons why we like it. I mean, I do, you know, we all do enough of that. But I think that there's something that speaks to us individually, that we kind of like this and we maybe see a value in it that we want to, you know, convey to others and, you know, evangelize to others as well. You know, maybe that was the point of your original question, Robert. I can't remember how we actually got on this topic, but, but you know, maybe the fact that, hey, this one person did that, maybe that's just something that is really neat to us. And we say, you know what, I can really appreciate this. And maybe, you know, like Sean, like you were saying, I mean, maybe there is some, you know, intrinsic value or, you know, some kind of, you know, je ne sais quoi, that you know, you just happen to know that this is the labor of love of one particular guy or two guys, and that's how it turned out. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's how he got on the subject, is we were talking about Dust and how people are, most of the reviews for Dust have been, yeah, we all thought we were going to like this, and this guy did a really cool thing, but turns out it's really short and kind of generic, but good for him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me talk about it from what I've put in about 90 minutes so far. And let me get off this tangent. Conceptually, the structure isn't far from Metroid, Castlevania, Muramasa, in that you explore kind of this intricate, you know, maze-like rooms, this selection of maze-like rooms to secure different items, which grant you access to even more rooms. And along the way, you encounter enemies and do a little bit of platforming, which offers a nice... kind of a nice reprieve from exploration. So basically nothing new in concept, but execution, I think it's actually kind of cool. And that's what makes Dust worthy of your $15. First, you know, looking at a screenshot, you can tell it's the art design. Which they use these meticulously, you know, drawn, these well-animated hand-drawn sprites, and seeing little things like cuddly rabbits scratch their ears, or the animals or environments. It just makes polygonal characters, really seeing polygon characters, seem so sterile. For me, it's almost like comparing kind of the look, feel, and movement of film to video. And I'm thinking of, like, the worst video possible, which was, like, old soap opera video, where everything is just so, you know, the lighting's very harsh and clear, and everything's so crystal clear. And it's just, you know, film is much more evocative. And I think there's something to be said about hand-drawn. And it doesn't come from a place of nostalgia for me, you know, growing up in, you know, kind of the sprite-based thing. But really, I just think the look and feel of it's cool. But, you know, lest I get too artsy-fartsy or elitist here. Let me jump into the combat. Your character, the main character, goes by the name as Dust. He's equipped with basic strikes, and you build up this really flame meter, this power meter that has this hypnotic kind of flame.
I have something. Before we get into that, I have to know. So he's an anthropomorphic animal character. What kind of animal character who may or may not be sexy is he?
I don't know. I've only gotten about an hour and a half, and he has this.
You know what I thought he looks like? He looks like a much more well thought out version of you remember Prometheus? A sort of poster child for bad downloadable games.
Yes, that PSP game. Did that ever come out?
Nope. But if you download the demo, it's still in your download list. You can still grab it.
Maybe Ridley Scott squashed that for. Because of the title.
But it's
that's
weird.
I thought you were talking about like big muscly like you know Voldemort guys. I wasn't sure what you were talking about. I never played
Prometheus. Was one of the first downloadable PSP games and demos, I guess. And it was a Metroidvania where you were a little anthropomorphic purple cat thing, and it was terrible. Like it was so buggy and glitchy.
Broken. Yeah.
And it never formally came out, but like I said, it exists out there somewhere.
It seemed
in the
a student project, and it just appeared that this was up on PSN. It just felt like they had so little to show for the PSP at that time. Like, hey, let's put this kind of student project that kind of works, and it doesn't crash too many times.
Yeah. Interesting.
Acquiring a hard set for your PSP. Yeah, look it up.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt you. I'm really interested in knowing about the combat because, like, the moment-to-moment stuff. Like, what is it all about?
So you know, you have your basic melee attacks, but then you also have Fidget, and he's kind of this flying fox. You know, stays out of trouble. And
sexy fox?
Too sexy. No.
Okay, all right.
Jeremy, you're worrying me. Get off the...
I just wonder, I want to know, like, how furry this thing is. But keep going.
Okay. Anyway, Fidget, the flying non-sexy fox, can launch these kind of underpowered projectiles. And then what you do is the real fun comes in. Once you do this spinning attack with your sword, which sends the projectile spinning around kind of the whole screen, and it basically turns your television set into, it looks like when the disco mirror ball spins around, it's just you have all these little things kind of swirling around. I guess what's cool is you're forced to trade off between these two systems, because if you spin your sword too much, you get knocked back and you get damaged there. So that's kind of the hook there. I've begun to tweak a little with alchemy, which lets you craft items. The enemies, they kind of leave coins around, materials for you to pick up. And so far, I think the only caveats for me is the combat could lose momentum if it doesn't change enough, meaning there aren't enough new techniques to be learned. And for me, and I'm not sure because I haven't heard anyone else report on this, the game would slow drastically even when there are no enemies on the screen. And sometimes, you know, there'd be 6 or 9 enemies and it would run, 60 frames per second. So that kind of seemed like a bug. But I replayed the beginning of the game, and the second time, the slowdown was drastically lessened. So not sure if it's my 360 or what, but it was definitely there.
All that hand-drawn art takes time. That's all I got to say.
I'm not sure if it's my system or what.
I'm saying he's drawing it for you as you're playing it. Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of like that. Was that Daffy Duck thing where you see his?
Yes, a duck amuck. The best
duck amuck. Yes.
Yes. Which actually, I always wanted to play the DS version of that. I heard that was awesome.
I've heard that too.
So it's fun and it's an experience, but it's not really a game. You can get through it in like 3 hours. It's kind of
you can get through Dustin too. So.
Yeah.
I got you there.
I've played about 90 minutes, and I don't know, but I don't have the feeling I'm anywhere close to being done with it. So last thing I'll touch on, Mugen Souls, which the NIS crew will come on in a little bit to explain and analyze. And I've only put maybe an hour and a half into the game. So essentially, it's a little bit of Disgaea playfulness mixed in with Compile Heart. They're the ones who developed all Sean's favorites, Cross Edge, Hyper Dimension, Neptunia, the first and second one.
Isn't this the one we talked about on the E3 podcast?
Maybe. Did we talk about it? It's the one that battle system, where it's almost too complex for its own good.
Mm-hmm.
So the combat is really close to Neptunia, where you have this circle, and Sean, you'll recognize this. So that indicates your free roaming distance, and you know you can move, and when you get close to enemies, then you can attack them. And the one kind of exception is what are called the Moe kills, and here you use this attack that's comprised of three different words to assault foes, which is really different from Disgaea. Disgaea is really, they have a statistical infatuation, I'll say. And like most Compile Heart games, the intro, as you're learning the game, they bring up these screens, which look like a mock-up of instruction booklets, and they have these red circles and a long bing indicating what you should be looking at. And it kind of drives me nuts. I think it's an awful way to introduce players, but I am having fun with it for no other reason because it does feature gratuitous panty shots, attack animations, which, yeah. Sean?
Is this the one where they cut out the parts where you have to scrub them to?
Ironically, the premium edition does come with a bath sponge, so I'm not sure what you're gonna be doing with that
Are the Moe kills like? Do they make you feel kind of?
No.
Dirty about yourself. I mean, is it?
One of the animations, they have two characters putting another in a giant slingshot that I saw. I can remember that one, but it does open with this, you know, unadulterated fan service where they have two females taking a bath together, and then there's a male that gets to spy on them, and then he kind of passes out, and something shoots out from his eyes, like red stuff shoots out from his eyes. I'm not sure if it's what's going on there, but yeah.
Why are video games so embarrassing?
I know, right? No, go listen, Deagle. Your homework is to go listen to our E3 podcast where you talk about this game. And
word for word,
you were a lot more skeeved out by it back then.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, the moral of this story is don't knock until you've tried it, right?
See, I guess so. Our Sean, we have a plan that I'm going to, you know, play it. I'll probably like it. I've some problems.
Heavily caveating here. I'll probably like it.
Well, from what I've seen so far, it hits all the right notes. And I think Sean will be a little bit more critical. And so I think a dual review will really kind of hit the sweet spot. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, who knows? Jeremy, why are you laughing?
I don't know. I'm just, it's just the mental imagery.
It pushes my buttons. I just think it's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Like everything you've said is pretty much an innuendo for this whole thing. So. Go back and listen to it and add like that's what she said to everything that you said. It's pretty gross.
That's what she said.
Yeah, that's what Jeremy's doing in his mind.
Dual review will hit the spot. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Let me pass on to Mr. Innuendo himself, Jeremy, the lawman. Innuendo man.
All right. I've got a pretty good spread here. I'd like to start out by talking about Tony Hawk Pro Skater HD on the Xbox 360. It came out a little bit earlier this month on the 360 as part of the Summer of Arcade for this year. It'll come out a little later this month, I believe, on PSN. I think they just announced in the last couple of days, so that'll be coming out for all of you skaters here very shortly. It from what I can tell, the reception on it has been pretty, I mean, positive, but kind of like, you know, kind of mitigated, like, yeah. And
it's been all over the place.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure. I haven't been able to nail down, because for me, I'll tell you what, I feel like it's, in terms of a remake of a PS1 era game, I think they did a really good job, at least. I mean, it looks really nice. It is definitely Tony Hawk Pro Skater HD. They rebuild a lot of the levels, used a lot more kind of modern elements in it, and it just looks really good.
Jeremy,
the play...
Yeah. You played the original Tony Hawk, the 1 and 2?
When was? Oh God, jeez, I couldn't even tell you. I mean, it's been so long. Actually, I was trying to think of this because I couldn't remember if the if it was Pro Skater that I really liked or if it was Underground that I really
I
liked.
really like the Underground because it became less about skating and more about just insane combos.
Yes, so that's the thing. So I get part of the reason, and I found it kind of funny that I couldn't tell exactly because the gameplay, if you've ever played a Tony Hawk game, you pretty much know what to expect, right? You've got your three different face buttons. You can hit your Y button on the top to grind on different things. You've got your, I'm going to get into the skater terminology here. I don't know what this all is, but you've got your flips and your kicks and your stale fish. And your ollies, and you can do them for combos. You catch a lot of air all the time, and you basically just try not to fall on your face. You just try to orient the board so that you're hitting the angle right when you land, getting a lot of points. Tony Hawk Pro Skater is, it kind of seems like there's not a lot to it, and I don't want to hold that against it because it is what it is, and I hate that phrase, but I mean, the levels are basically there are a few modes. I mean, there's kind of free, kind of dick around mode or just kind of free play, but most of the levels where you're achieving things are timed levels between a minute and a half, 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes, something like that, and you have a they've come up with a list of goals that you can try and meet, like getting, crazy score or crazy wicked score or totally hot score, bro, and you get different levels of victories for those. They've added something new. They've added some more collection items that I don't really remember from the first game. You
Well,
still spell.
they changed the VHS tapes to DVDs.
Oh yeah,
Yeah,
you do get DVDs. That's right, and they have
I think they
updated
should
some
have kept
things.
that. That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah, well, and they did. I mean, there are some things like I don't know what Monster Energy drinks have to do with it, but there now are Monster Energy logos around, and that's what I was saying earlier about how they updated some things. Like there are some more modern looking billboards and things like that. So I didn't go
Or
back.
product placement.
Yeah, product placement, things like that. So I'm not sure exactly what it took to get this game, to come out. But like I said, the other thing about it is that they picked levels from both Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2. Not bad levels, a pretty good mix of, I don't know what you'd call it. There's the downhill levels, like in the mall, skating around the guardrails and things like that. And then they have the more playgroundy kind of levels, the hangars and the, just the different places where you just kind of futz around and kind of pop mad ollies on things, I guess. And so that's a pretty good mix, but there's not a lot to it, I mean, I should have counted, but there's like 10 levels, I think, in this package. I've heard that they're going to be doing DLC levels. If this is the kind of thing that you really like, I mean, I guess I would definitely recommend this to somebody who's never played a Tony Hawk game. You probably, in that case, haven't played some of the newer games like Skate. I mean, this is definitely no Skate. One thing that I really missed was the more open world kind of element. I think this is definitely a situation where you can go back and say that. The addition of open world elements to skating games definitely was, an awesome step for that genre of the sport. You kind of feel a little bit cramped. You kind of, but again, it's all about scoring the points, and you can chain a lot of, chain a lot of moves. It tells you what you're doing. You can flip, lefty or righty. They have different names for them too. I'm a terrible skater. I'm sorry, everybody. Well, what are they called? There's like, because I'm thinking back to SSX. There's like, what's the, there's like
Footy?
wonky. Yeah,
Ollie?
yeah. There's
Oh,
like,
yeah.
no. There's
Oh,
like different postures
Goofy
you can
foot.
get into.
Goofy
Yeah, like
foot.
Goofy and Mickey and yeah,
Donald.
they're all there. Yeah, oh yeah, they're all there. Anyway, so you kind of, if you've ever seen a Tony Hawk game or played it, you kind of know what to expect. You're locked out of levels until you. So you start out with, I'm trying to remember what the first level is. It's probably like the skate park or something, and then you go to school too, and
That's
there's the
Tony
mall.
Hawk's over near me, Woodland Hills, his warehouse.
Oh, that's right, the warehouse. That's right. So you kind of see all these levels, and you're like, I'd really just like to tool around on that level. But you have to get five objectives on this level, and then four objectives on the next level. And you kind of just pick the easy ones, like you got to spell skate, or you got to get a certain score. So you just kind of pick the two or three easiest things to beat, and then move on to the next level. At least that's how I've been playing it. So I kind of also fall in that middling sort of like it's really good for what it is. Like if you remember liking Tony Hawk, you probably still like this. You probably won't love it though, and I think. think that's what it is. This is a situation where, in terms of just the play, I think the sheen has kind of come off a little bit. You know, I mean, you definitely, it's from an older era, and like I said, I don't want to hate on it for that, because it was awesome at the time, and so you know, it hasn't lost any of that. The translation in terms of you know, technically from the old to new, I mean, there's still, you know, clipping elements and you know, the ragdolling stuff is a little wonky sometimes, but by and large, you know, really cool experience. You know, if you really are into it, you can pick different skaters. You can put your own avatar on there and kind of watch him biff it, and blood sprays everywhere as you plant your face on the bottom of the, you know.
Jeremy, you didn't read my review, did you?
I got
some flack. One of the things was the old horse matches were gone. I thought the you know, you mentioned the technical merits of the game. I thought that the frame rate, did you play any multiplayer?
No, not at all. No, I don't have
any. Oh, yeah, multiplayer, it's not so hot. And I think in single player it's kind of serviceable, but for what it does, considering, you know, Unreal, there's no reason why it shouldn't be at 60 frames per second.
Did Tony Pro Skater have multiplayer at all?
The original?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second one did.
Yeah, it did.
Did it? Okay.
But my whole thing was that the older games, and I approached it from, I figured the average reader would not be familiar and probably would not have played it. And one of the main criticisms I had was that, okay, they helped those people out by offering an in-game map. So if you wanted to know where that DVD was, bring up the map, there it is. But they didn't have an in-game moveset. And for a digital title, you know, without an instruction booklet,
that is weird. Well, I guess the original didn't have like the moveset wasn't in the instruction booklet. It was all sort of like self-discovery kind of stuff.
Yeah, and really, like, are you gonna like do the like pop ollie kick flip nose bone? I mean,
but sometimes they ask you to do that. They ask you to do that, you know, specifically if you want to earn whatever the little, you know, commodity
they
is.
Do have that, like,
you have to do a stale fish over a gap. Yep.
Yeah,
and that was really frustrating. I thought, why, you know, if they could offer a map, why can't they have like a little in-game thing? And that was
true to life, though, because in the skate parks, those kids, they're just like kicking stuff, you know, 6 hours a day. Like, they're not really doing anything.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to talk 6 hours playing Tony Hawk.
Yeah,
I have one question though.
Okay.
When you go to the warehouse, do they play Superman?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good.
And you know, that was the other thing, and I'm feeling my age a little bit. I can only listen to so much ska music in one sitting. Is that just me?
I want to say it's not just you, but at the same time, it is not just you.
Like, after about half an hour, 45 minutes, I'm like, God, give me something that's not syncopated. Just give me something different.
I love ska, but I'm in the same boat. Like, I'll turn some ska off, like, yeah, I'm listening to ska. And then I'm like, nope. You know what?
And again, it's a product of its time. Maybe one day this will turn up in the capsule. Like, here was like the, you know, what was this? The late 90s, something like that. So,
it's,
you know,
it's kind of like drum and bass, I think.
Yeah.
Where it's cool, you know, for in 15-minute spurts. And there's my innuendo again.
And then you're like, I got to take an Advil.
Yeah.
Need to go to bed.
Yep.
This is one of those situations, and I have a really kind of a controversial standpoint on demos, but this is one of those situations where, you know, you could almost kind of just like play the demo and be happy with it.
Just like the original Tony Hawk.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Tony Hawk Pro Skater, get it on the Xbox now, wait for it on the PlayStation. It's pretty much Tony Hawk, looks better, and you can probably get what you want out of it if you're into Tony Hawk. So, next thing that I played was on the PC, Sins of a Solar Empire Rebellion. I know that I have talked about Elemental, Fallen Enchantress, I think, was the new one that's coming out. This is a similar kind of idea from, I believe the name of the developer is Ironclad Studios, I think. It's published by Stardock Entertainment. They are known originally for their Galactic Civilizations franchise, which is a series of 4X games. Points to anybody who can name the 4Xs?
Exploration. Exploitation.
It's a trick question.
Exterminate.
They all start with E, so there actually are no 4Xs. So.
I know, but
exploration.
Exploration's one of them. Extermination's one of them, right?
Yes. It's
expansion?
Yes. Explore, expand, exploit, exterminate. But I always found it dumb. So it should be the 4 E's. Anyway.
Ask me about Triple X movies.
Triple X. Well, we just had the Triple X Olympiad, so this is the time. We're up in the ante with four X's. Yeah. So the idea here is the same as something like Galactic Civilizations or Masters of Orion for those who, you know, that franchise holds something dear in their hearts, where, you know, you basically will have particular space lanes that go between planets or solar systems, and you can set up shop on each of these little planets. They have different levels of resources, different planet types, and you basically use those resources to build fleets, to build capital ships, set up trading lanes to feed your economic machine, and basically try and outgrow all of the other empires. The thing about Sins of a Solar Empire, Rebellion is actually the latest kind of, I guess, standalone expansion, you could almost think of it as. The original Sins of a Solar Empire came out, like, what, 5 years ago? Something like that. Yep. And they've added on to that different little add-ons like Entrenchment, which added you know, things like you know, homeland defense. You set up minefields and things like that. And then Diplomacy was an expansion that added, believe it or not, diplomacy to it. I mean, there was diplomacy before, but they try to give you little missions and things and interactions between the different races. So you have three different races that you can be, basically the humans, the aliens, and like the weird humans. It's the Tech, the Vasari, and the Covenant, I think, or Convent, or something like that. Anyway, and so each race has its own tech tree, which is really cool, giant tech tree. You can build lots of different kinds of ships and things like that. So Rebellion includes all of the previous expansions, all of the previous Sins of the Solar Empire content, plus some new stuff. They now let you kind of mix and match the different factions so that you can build new kinds of ships and new technologies and new trees of different things that you can do. And then the big thing, pun intended, is now the new Titan class ships that you can build, which are these giant, you know, really big ships. I mean, they're Titans, right? And This is one of those games that you can't really sit down and play for, you know, half an hour at a time. I mean, this is one of those games that is a real commitment. So I don't play it often, but when I do, I'm pretty much in it for the whole day, you know, 6 to 8 hours straight just playing Sins of a Solar Empire. And it's really a lot of fun. I mean, for new players, it can be kind of intimidating. I'm not sure if there's a demo for the Rebellion variant out there, but you can at least play the original Sins of a Solar Empire. I know there's a demo out there for that. And if you have an interest in strategy games in general, I highly recommend at least trying it out. You may need to find a mentor to kind of walk you through stuff, because you're working with a couple of different resources. You have your money, your metal, your crystal, and then each of the things that you can buy has cost for all three of those things. So as you research your tech trees, you have to kind of be managing, all right, how much crystal do I have? Because that's usually something that is a little more scarce, and it's usually involved in building you know, we're doing more research kinds of things. So there is a you know, kind of a bunch of variables to keeping track of, but works really well multiplayer. If you have a friend, it's more of a comp stomp kind of game. You might want to just get a couple friends and kind of build a coalition against the AI and make a night of that. Because it's really kind of discouraging to, you know, to put in 6 hours and then just crash and burn when you finally clash with the enemy fleets. Everything is done in real time, which is I'm not sure that there are a lot of games that do that. There might be some more of that. I think Endless Space came out. It might have a real time component to it, but there aren't turns, so everything keeps going, which is good in that you always have something to turn your attention to, either developing a new planet, you know, kind of nursing a fleet back to health that maybe didn't fare so well against space pirates, something like that. But it's also kind of bad in that if you're new at it, again, there's just a lot of stuff going on, and it's hard to focus on exactly what your bigger picture is. Interesting thing about Sins of a Solar Empire Rebellion is that it, I think it just came out that Stardock did a lot more business with the digital version of this game than they did in retail, and they're actually now looking at doing total, you know, 100% digital distribution from here on out, which I think for PC games is probably a wise move.
Yeah.
But Sins of a Solar Empire, I believe this version is a little more expensive. You can get the original both on Steam or on Impulse, which is now the GameStop download service. And you can probably get the old school version for, I mean, it's pieced out. Again, you could do the just plain vanilla version for probably $5 or $10. You can get the Sins of a Solar Empire Trinity, which comes with all of the original expansions, and you can probably get that for $20 or less. I believe this one is probably $30 or maybe even $40. So if you had played it in the past, the Sins of the Solar Empire, some of the older versions, and you liked it, I can definitely recommend it at that price, to kind of adopt the new stuff. I think you'll find that there are a lot of welcome additions, new things that kind of freshen up the formula a little bit. If you've never played it before, I highly recommend trying out something similar first before you make that investment, because I would hate to recommend to somebody to buy this and then find out that it's just deer in the headlights, just like, oh my God. But it is really a great experience. I mean, you've probably heard people talking about it before. You can, zoom your map all the way in to see like the actual ships and little fighters and bombers flying around, and see the detail on these ships. If you have a pretty good PC, you can crank the detail up and it just looks spectacular. You can mouse wheel it all the way back out until you're seeing just the entire galaxy, and you get a very strategic overview of what's going on. It's just a lot of fun, and I tend to like games that are a little more meaty, kind of complicated. There is a little more of an investment up front to try and figure out what you're doing, but once you get into it, especially if you have a friend to go along with, you can get a pretty good stretch of gameplay out of Sins of Solar Empire. So.
How big is the tech tree? I always thought that they might have had one of the biggest in the industry.
It's probably, it's been a few years. I mean, the tech tree probably hasn't grown too much since the thing was originally released, but mm-hmm. I think it was the tech tree for this was famous because they put it up on the wall at the offices over at 1UP in the bathrooms there, and I guess it took up I thought was a great idea. Yeah, I mean, they, while you're,
study that, yeah.
Doing your business and just, plan your strategy, whatever, which... maybe you're planning your strategy on the toilet anyway. You might as well have something to look at. But the tricky thing about that question...
They have post-it, you are here markers too?
Kind of. I mean, you almost...
That would have been awesome.
See, the thing is, though, that it...
Now, this is pre-tablets we're talking. So this, the good old days, 1UP.
Yeah, that's right. But the tricky thing about that question is that it's not actually just one tech tree. It's like... 5 tech trees, and then each race has their own distinct tech tree. So it's not like this is the green guys and the red guys, and they have the same tech. It's actually every faction is unique, which makes it cool. Which even for me, somebody who's played a lot of Sins of Solar Empire, I very rarely play anything other than the humans, which is probably what most people do. But there's probably, in terms of replayability, you just cannot beat something like this. It's insane. So Sins of a Solar Empire Rebellion, check it out. On the other far end of the scale, so that was the big, complicated kind of game, I have been playing a little bit of Wizorb on the PSP.
I picked it up too, as well.
Yeah. Okay, so we can maybe talk about this. So Wizorb is pretty much, I think it's making its appearance on PS Mini's last of everything. I mean, it's been on PC, it's been on Xbox Live Indie Games.
I think it's on Chrome.
It might be.
No, so I'm serious about that. I think that's where I've played it.
Yeah. I mean, it's been getting a lot of buzz too. People really like it. So it's finally on PS Minis, which, now it's time for me to buy it. And the concept is, I have a question for you guys. So Arkanoid or Breakout?
Arkanoid.
See, for me,
that we favor.
Well, I mean,
I cut my teeth on Breakout, but I do like the power-ups.
Well, that's the thing. So for me, I have to describe this to others as an Arkanoid style game.
Yeah.
But to me, that's like me speaking another language, because I never really played a lot of Arkanoid. So Breakout or even Brickout, I think, was even what I played. Some probably knockoff game that was on the Apple or something. But but the idea is that it's sort of like the ping pong paddle that goes across the bottom of the screen. You bounce your, in this case, your little magic orb up into the level, and you break bricks and get little power-ups out of them, and there are little bad guys there. But the charm of this game is that they've styled it in kind of a... I'm trying not to use the term old school anymore.
Pixel art.
Yeah, like it looks a lot like the original Legend of Zelda, kind of.
16-bit?
Link's Awakening, but
let's say Shining Force, since that game is awesome.
Yeah. Okay, we'll say Shining Force. And there are power ups. So you, as the, as this wizard, I don't even know if he has a name. You're just basically this wizard. He transforms into his magical staff and then bounces this magic ball around. And there are power ups. So you have a couple of standing spells that you can use at any given time. You can, I think the first one I started using was the Gust of Wind, which I found really helpful. So you can gust the ball left or right and kind of get it back in that sweet spot so it can start breaking more bricks. You can also, if you hit the, on the PSP, it's the X button, right, as it hits your wand or your paddle. You what?
You are busting my balls about innuendo.
I just said wand.
Okay, or paddle.
Magic wand.
The wizard's name is Cyrus. Well, I've got you guys.
That sounds right. So Cyrus. So you can cast a fireball, so it sets this ball. I said ball. Is that funny? Ball.
No. Mildly.
So that's about a 3, 4 on the scale. Anyway, so the ball will break through all the bricks for a limited time. You can also do what are the other powers, Robert? You can do like a fairy kind of thing, fairy spell that you can place the ball wherever
right.
you want.
Well, the one thing, they have a bunch of power-ups, but the one thing I like and what irritates me about most breakout Arkanoid clones is when you have that last brick, and for whatever reason there's metal bricks or something, you can't get to it. And the only thing you have at your control is the angle that you're hitting, and this eliminates that as much as possible. It gives you plenty of power-ups, and you never really get stuck on a level for too long.
Well, because you die eventually, and then you have to start the whole level all over again. So the way this game is laid out is you kind of it has a little bit of a Castle Crashers, or there's kind of a map that you go on for these different worlds. You start out in this little broken town, and you earn coins as you go through the game, and you can shoot your ball into these different shops. I'm trying not to laugh. It's not that funny. quiet. And if you shoot your ball into the shop, the shopkeeper will sell you different things like potions.
Barbiturates.
Drugs. What are some of the other ones? There's one that can make your wand longer.
Oh, Jeremy, kill me. Yes, there's definitely that one.
It's just a wand. There's hearts that you can get to give you more life, more tries, basically, in case you die. There's some other stuff you can get, too. But anyway, there's special modes that you can get into, kind of reminds me of Bubble Bobble, all the things floating around, and you can just shoot the ball into the bubbles and get little power-ups. So you have a magic meter that so there is a limit. So like Robert was saying, you can definitely guide the ball to that last, really frustrating brick, but you also have a limited number of times that you can do this before you run out of your magic power. And just generally, I think it's a pretty good combination. There are other PS minis that are Arkanoid clones that just have so many power-ups, and it's just like, there's so much going on. This really takes a pretty well-defined little set of features and just lays it over the top of a pretty good breakout or Arkanoid kind of idea.
I think the RPG element where you're talking to people in town, I didn't really care for, and the reason for that was because it really wasn't a payoff.
Yeah. So I think I started to talk about earning coins. So you can use the coins in case you shoot your ball into the shopkeeper, or you can you can rebuild the homes of the dogs and the people in town. And I don't, they give you little bonuses and things for it, but it's just a way to spend the money. I mean, it's pretty simple. And again, you have to kind of go back and say, well, it's a mini kind of game. But definitely keeps you occupied. And I'm kind of wondering, Sean, you said you may have played this on Chrome. I was wondering, on the mini version on the PSP, I sometimes run into some slowdown. And I can't tell. It's a little hard for me to tell if it's done intentionally.
I realized it wasn't on Chrome. I actually played it. It was the, you know how Steam will do those free games that you can play for a couple days? And then that's what I did.
Really? They did that one free? Because you could pretty much play the whole thing in an afternoon, I guess. But
I mean, they did it with Worms, too, Worms.
But Worms you could just go back and play forever. But that is one thing about this is that I haven't played through the whole thing yet, and I don't know that I really get the feeling that I'd want to go back again. I don't know if that's just me, but
I feel like I'd go back to it as much as I go back to Arkanoid.
Yeah.
Which is never.
Yeah, touche, touche. And there is a little bit of a frustration component. You know, what, like I said, when you go on this map, there's like a series of levels, maybe, what, 6 or 7 levels, and there's a boss fight at the end, which is kind of neat. But if you die, if you run out of lives at any point during that, you pretty much go back to the beginning and start over, and it's kind of one of those, like,
yeah,
I
got
good.
Bored quicker than, you know, I got bored before I got frustrated with it, though.
So if you found out that one guy made this, would you like it anymore?
I think there were multiple guys.
Oh, okay. Well, then screw them.
What if I told you that multiple women made this?
I'd love it. Game of the year. Game of the year.
What if I told you that two guys and a dog made this?
Throw in a platypus and I'm sold.
Wait. What if I told you a guy, a girl, and a pizza place made this?
You're just trying to bring it to Cookie Mama. Aren't you sure?
There was two guys, a girl, and a pizza place. There was a show at one point.
During what era?
During the 90s. That's how Ryan Reynolds got his start.
Okay. Thank you for Ryan
wow.
Reynolds.
Next
trivia.
Is going to be like, hey, there was this show with, you know, with Fred Savage's little brother, Ben Savage. He had this show. Anyway, WizOrb. So $5.
So, Sean, instead of a 90s TV trivia, how about you tell us what you've been playing?
Well, first off, I went to SIGGRAPH, which
okay.
I feel like that used to be something that game sites covered.
Right.
Special interest graphics. They did show an exclusive Star Wars 13
yeah.
Yeah, trailer there, and I saw that. So there was some video
running on. Did they tell you?
A PC of some sort.
The rumor is that's, you know, some kind of next gen hardware.
No, I think this was running. I mean, it was just a trailer, and it was basically the in between what they just showed at GameCom and what they showed at E3. Because I was with my boss, and he was like, "Oh, you want to stop and watch this for your website?" And I look up, and I was like, "Oh, we already saw that at E3." And I was like, "Oh, we didn't see all this third person shootery part at E3." And then it, you know, the GameCom's trailer was more of that, so got to see a little bit of gameplay, which it looks. From what I saw, it looked like Uncharted, which
yeah.
I have zero interest in Star Wars, but I kind of think Uncharted in space sounds pretty cool. So that was exciting. Yeah. But
how about Uncharted with zombies? How do you feel about that?
Nope. We need to bring back monsters is what we need to bring back, because I was thinking about that.
Or crazy homeless people.
Well, it's just on Nintendo, like, you know, those old games, it was you have your game and there's some sort of monster that you don't feel bad about killing because they're monsters, right?
Sure.
But it's become, and Sage brought this up a long time ago, that zombies, you put zombies in a game because you can't feel bad about killing zombies, but I think the point of zombies was supposed to be that you do feel bad because they used to be people.
I never thought about that. I thought zombies, at least, you know, the psychological factor was that they were strength in numbers. One or two you could always wipe out, but the horror, the scare was that they were much like crowds. You know?
See, I feel like that would work. That idea would work better with insects than with humans.
Where's Blue to talk about Earth Defense Force?
Yeah, no, I would agree with him in this case. But anyway, that's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about SIGGRAPH
okay.
because they gave me the belief that arcades might make a comeback. Because the big thing this
so they
year
they handed you a crack pipe.
No, they basically the big thing at SIGGRAPH this year was haptic feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing it in ways that I think people would be interested in. And when I say people, I mean the Wii crowd, the folks that are tossing money around every once in a while.
Okay.
But not things that they would want to put in their house. So things like there was a tennis game. It was very similar to like a Virtua Tennis.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole setup was you had a tennis racket with tons of little motors on it. And it did head tracking. And when you hit the ball, not only could you feel it in the racket, but you could actually feel where the ball would have hit on the racket.
Okay.
So it was really, really cool. Then there was also this robot that a guy with a virtual reality headset was wearing, and he was wearing gloves to control the hands, and it gave him enough haptic feedback that he could feel your hand when you shook the robot's hand so he wouldn't crush it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another thing that I've actually got pictures of this. We can put it in the show notes, but it's a chair. It looks like an electric chair. and they strap you in, and it sends currents through your arms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to control the angle of the hair on your arms to affect your emotions. So they'll show you pictures, and then depending on what emotion you're supposed to feel, it'll send a certain current through your arm, and your hair will stand up in a certain way. So if you're supposed to feel shock, it'll stand straight up, or if you're supposed to feel worried, it'll maybe go to whatever angle that your hair is supposed to go when you're nervous.
I'd put in 4 tokens for that.
Yeah, it was interesting.
But do you get the sensation when, obviously, you don't get the emotion?
Well, here's the thing.
It's a little like taking Viagra. Like, you get the sensation, and it stands straight up, but you don't feel anything.
Well, it was funny because they told me that what I described to them was not what was supposed to happen, but what I
swear it's never happened before.
Well, what I described to them sounded like what they said they were trying to get. So basically, you would sign your waiver because you're getting electricity shot through your body, right? And then they would sit you down, and then you look at a blank screen for a while, and then a picture would come up, and they would have a sound, and then you're supposed to feel something, and all that's supposed to be random. And then that's the way they explained it is that the effect of the shock is supposed to enhance whatever you're supposed to be feeling anyway. But the problem was the one that they gave me was shocking, you know, like surprise, scared sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a guy screaming at me. And it, like, I jumped and it, like, my heart raced and all this stuff. And I told him, I was like, that was incredible because, you know, like I really felt that. And they're like, did you feel your hair stand on end? I was like, no, I felt it, like, in my heart. And I'm like showing them this because they're super Japanese and I'm an idiot American and just assume that they can't understand English. And
did
then
you talk,
like,
really loud and be like, in my heart?
Yeah, and then I pointed to my heart. But then they were really disappointed, like, oh, you didn't feel your hair at all? And I was like, no, I was concentrating on the fact that I thought my heart was going to stop. And they're like, oh.
Was it just an increased amount of current going through your system?
I know. Maybe you're
it just it seems like you stuck your finger in a socket, Sean.
Well, I also almost broke their machine because they were doing adjustments to it when they had me sit down, and the guy accidentally closed the left arm too early, and I sat on it, and it has all these tubes and stuff. Mm. And so he was worried for a while that the tubes were affected. So I mean, it's possible that it didn't do anything to me, and I was like just genuinely scared by this guy screaming at me.
Sean, you almost became a superhero that sent charges out of your rectum.
Maybe I still am. I haven't tried that yet. But they also had this one thing that was
okay. Wait. Let's backtrack. Out of all these, I'm not feeling the revival of the arcade.
Well, no, I'm saying the idea of haptic feedback and the idea of
all these
heavily accessory laden.
All these need space, and the arcades don't really. I mean,
I'm not saying arcades in the traditional sense that you and I would go to.
Okay.
I think that there will be this concept of these games that started on the Wii. You focus them. You have a tennis setup. You have a whatever setup. Enough things that are different.
Similar to like the Top Gun places that they had. Do you remember
that? Yeah, exactly. But if you could get a place that has, you know, maybe 10 of these different experiences, I feel like that's something people would do more than I'm going to go have these same experiences I have at home.
They say, I want my arm hair to go to the right, 3 o'clock, or, you know.
I was saying more the tennis sort of thing.
Okay.
I was just using that as another example of haptic feedback. Feedback was a big thing there. The glove thing is the only thing I could see if they really focused on it being an at-home device that could have a lot of different uses.
Mm.
But these sort of more focused, like the tennis, or I don't know, maybe you could figure out a cool way to do a light gun shooter with haptic feedback. Mm. I feel like those could be a big consumer thing in the future. But I also want to talk about this weird-ass thing that I tried. So they put this strap on your hand. It's a strap on your let me see if I remember this, on your wrists, on top of your hand, and then on each of your fingers. And then it sends currents through your hand at a certain program, and it controls your hands, and they made me play a harp.
So
without control of my hand, I was playing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
That's the weirdest
fucking thing I've ever experienced in my life.
But were you playing like a virtuoso or just kind of simple?
It was pretty simple, but
it showed. Now that's cool.
That is definitely cool.
Like if they could get you to play piano, you know, play a concerto or something, that would be kind of cool.
I don't know. It was interesting to see that there were still video game stuff there, but not to the level that you would think.
I just go back to E3 when we were at IndieCade, and you got so mad at IndieCade saying, that's not a game, damn it.
Oh, yeah, the zombie thing.
All these things. Okay, now going back to the harp thing, did you feel like a little twitch in every, you know, it was just kind of your fingers twitching? Almost
no,
like when
was,
you run current
through
it.
It was my wrist, too, because okay. If you can imagine, it's one of those Asian right. harps, the ones with the plank of wood with the stuff on it. Right. And if you can imagine, you're hovering your hand over it. Mm-hmm. And the guy put my... I'm doing this, trying to remember exactly how he did. He put my hand in a specific place.
Right.
And it was my fingers moving and my wrist, because my wrist had to kind of hover around the right parts of the harp.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost felt like...
You were a player of piano.
No, it felt like my arm was broken. You know, like I couldn't feel my hand while I was doing it.
Huh.
So could they do this to other parts of your body, or
that's for another podcast.
Yeah. Robert, what is wrong with you? I just asked a general question.
Sorry. That was after the show.
I wanted to bring that up because Ubisoft was there and they had a 5x10 booth, which is the smallest possible booth you can have.
The show.
And they showed nothing.
Shooter Mania? Well,
no, they did not show a single thing. They just had their Ubisoft banner,
mm-hmm.
and they were sending out tweets that if you're at SIGGRAPH and you answered really generic questions, you would win basically the T-shirt they gave away at E3. And that was pretty much all the video game that was at SIGGRAPH this year.
So the thing, I just have one thing to say about arcades. Arcades are just a place you can go in meet space to buy DLC over and over again. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. Like, the type of experiences I had at SIGGRAPH, I think are things that the right people could turn into things that Joe and Sally Consumer would actually want to go do in
really?
A space. I really do.
I feel they're cool for us, but I just think they're too experimental.
They're not even that cool for us. Would you pay $5 to play the harp?
I was saying, would you pay $5 to play an actual game of tennis against someone somewhere else in the world where you actually feel where the ball goes and it actually looks like you're hitting an actual ball?
I would at least once, I'll admit.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people would at least once. And I mean, that's what arcades are all about, is giving you these experiences.
Well, no. I think multiple times. And I think that's what they need is to continue, you know, to perpetuate that. Playing Space Invaders once isn't going to, you know, make Taito.
Bring back arcades.
Right. Everybody's tried Space Invaders once, and some people have tried Space Invaders multiple times, and I think that's the way international tennis would work.
I mean, there's guys who play Golden Tee constantly, so
that is true.
There are still people
in
who play
the year 2012?
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. Sad.
Go to your local Golden Tee bar. That is a company that is very good at supporting their product.
I didn't even know that was still around.
Yeah, it is a big moneymaker.
I always thought the Golden Tee bar was some other kind of bar. I never really wanted to go in, but
Yeah, but other than that, big things I've been playing are
R. Kelly on that one?
Well,
sorry.
Yeah.
Golden Tee.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I've been playing a lot of
number one.
I've been playing a lot of Star Tropics because Continue, if anybody watches Continue on YouTube, they have a new show called the Continue Cast, which is basically a game club. And they did Star Tropics this past month. You guys could look it up. It was fun. Mm-hmm. And then I played a lot of Saturn games because I was working really late one night.
I remember when we did that on the show. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
What did we call that segment?
We called it Game Club, I think. But the difference between what they do and what we did was that we spent 5 minutes on it, and they spent an entire month on it. So
yeah,
it's kind of a better format for that.
Sure.
But I was playing a bunch of Saturn games, and it's weird because what happened was I was staying at work late, basically copying files. So it was a lot of me copying stuff and then waiting a couple hours for it to finish and then moving to the next PC and copying stuff and waiting a couple hours for it to finish. So while I was waiting for stuff, I downloaded an emulator and played Shining Force because that's what I do. And I played Panzer Dragoon and a couple other games too. And then I got home and I realized that my PC plays these games a lot better than my Saturn.
Really?
Really, and it was weird because that was the thing about Saturn emulation is it was so hard for the longest time and that I just kind of didn't do it.
Yep.
And it's so weird that now I'm playing games on my Saturn in the proper way, and I'm like, this fucking sucks. It's slow and buggy and crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really disappointed. But yeah. Panzer Dragoon, man.
I always remember somebody blamed it. It had 7 different processors.
Mm-hmm.
The Saturn, I guess they were all proprietary, so it was hard to emulate, but I'm glad they, you know, got that out of the way. I'm sure with enough, you know, CPU power, you could emulate, you know, most anything.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, you know, you're supposed to, as good podcasters, we're supposed to sit here and say, oh, but, you know, only play the games that you bought, but it's, the Saturn is such a weird little animal because none of that stuff's ever coming out. The one story that bummed me out was on the Bombcast, they had that guy who used to work for GameTap. And he said they had a working PC version of Panzer Dragoon Saga,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, supposed to be the Holy Grail. Right. And they couldn't release it because GameTap went out of business. But somebody still owns the rights to that PC version that was part of GameTap, and it will never see the light of
day.
Wasn't
that Ted Turner? Wasn't that his thing?
Was Ted Turner GameTap?
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was Turner. Well, I'm not sure.
You could be right.
Yeah. Start bumming Atlanta now.
Yeah, but... But yeah, I mean, it's stuff like that, you know, like there's so many of that stuff that was just lost, and the rest of the stuff is, you know, like the Shining Force games, they're half owned by Nintendo now.
Right.
So it's just so weird.
And then it's also hard when a major retailer, I think anything before, God, what is it? The Xbox is unavailable at like GameStop or most retailers. Like you really have to go to specialty stores.
Well, and even if you buy it, you know, you own the physical copy, you went on eBay and bought it. It's not like a single dime of that is going to the original creators. Yeah. So pirate that shit. It's worth it.
Oh,
you know what they say? If there's any weirdness in the rights, free for all.
No, not just the weirdness of the rights. If a legitimate way comes out for me to give Camelot my money to play Shining Force, well, I guess Shining Force isn't a good example because I do legitimately own all that stuff. But I bought all of those and not a single penny of it went to anybody who worked on it. So, what's the point?
I mean, it sounds like you've got it all rationalized out. So, whatever keeps you up at night.
There we go.
I'm just saying, if there is a way that they want to put Panzer Dragoon Saga out so that I can give them money, then I will do that.
All right.
In the meantime.
But they won't. In the meantime, I want to play that game, so I'm gonna burn the hell out of it. Same with Battletoads. Battletoads?
No, trivia.
Okay, because you can't play Battletoads either.
Why?
Because
that's
everybody gone. Everybody owns the rights to that.
Oh, I still have my copy, so I'm safe. Anyway, trivia time. I was gonna do a 20 questions with the game character which was suggested by a listener, but. I couldn't decide on one, so I thought we'd do it normal this week. What do you think about next week?
It's a penny.
Ah, shit. You got off the first one. No.
It's a Laharl.
Keep going with the disguise stuff, Edna. So, trivia question number one. Hopefully, reflexes and retinas are ready for Dust in Elysian Tale, the concluding Summer of Arcade entry created and coded by the one-man team known as Dean Dodrell, a.k.a. Humble Hearts. Just how long was the game's development cycle? A, nearly 9 years. B, 5 years, 7 months. C, 6 years, 8 months, and 12 days. Or D, over 11 years.
Oh, dude, it seems like I just saw an interview with this guy and he talked about it.
C.
Yeah, I'm kind of inclined to go with the 6 years one.
Okay, correct answer is nearly 9 years, A.
Boo. You
guys are off to a great start.
Wait, can I just say something really quick?
Yes.
What, would you say the name of his fake company was?
Humble Hearts?
No, Humble Hearts is his nickname.
Why didn't he just go with his name? I feel like that would be more power to the dude.
I don't know, Sean Nola.
Sean Nola. I'm not Sean Nola's plural.
You're known as the Nola. Or no, do people still call you Snola?
I think people just call me Nola now, which is funny because I went to college with a guy who that was his nickname. So it's like every time
you know what, a ton of people have that nickname. It's like T-Bone. We might as well start calling you T-Bone. I wanted to be T-Bone.
No, you're J-Dog.
J-Dog. Actually, you know, because I was looking at it because we did this as the pick of the week, I think, this last one. I actually picked this game. I haven't played it yet, but I noticed that they're actually making like a feature film using the same IP. Yes. Or something?
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
They're really hitching the horse to their cart. Cart to their horse.
One of those.
One or the other. They're wagging the dog.
They're putting the cart before something. Cart before the horse. That's what I was looking for. They're putting their cart before the horse.
Well, not if they have the you know, it's already drawn out and they have all the art.
Yeah, but they're really, if they're making a movie, they're really expecting this to be something people want.
Okay. I didn't know if it was a short or a full, is it a full length?
I thought they said it was a feature film. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I could have read that wrong, but check it out on the Elysian Tale website if you want.
Okay. Number two, Sleeping Dogs features a number of voice talents from the work of both Hong Kong and American cinema. Name the film that has no direct connection to any of the voiceover artists from the game. Okay, so name the film. A, Die Another Day. B, Total Recall, the 2012 version. C, DOA, Dead or Alive. D, New Police Story. Or E, Infernal Affairs.
I'm going to say the DOA movie.
Okay.
I'm going to say...
And...
Oh, sorry.
Blue.
And Shlong Kong, your favorite XXX movie.
That's my second favorite. Jeremy?
Wow. I was going to go with Infernal Affairs because I am not familiar with that one.
Okay. Correct answer. Sean got it. DOA, Dead or Alive.
Boo.
But I say what? In the butt.
Number three, this week PSN is offering up the digital revival of Overworks 2002 reboot of the Shinobi franchise, which both delighted and vexed gamers upon its original release. Name the series which the Overwork team hasn't had a hand in. A, Phantasy Star. B, Streets of Rage. Having trouble talking. C, Super Monkey Ball. Or D, Skies of Arcadia.
I'm going to say Super Monkey Ball.
They did like all kinds of Sega stuff, right? Were any of those things that you just said not Sega games?
No. That
they were all Sega
unifying
games.
Factor, yes.
Damn it. Okay, read them again. I'm going to have to do this line.
In honor of Sage. Phantasy yes. Star, Streets of Rage, Super Monkey Ball, and Skies of Arcadia.
You know what? All of those seem like Monkey Ball seems a little too whimsical for that group. I'm gonna go with Sean and I'm gonna say Monkey Ball.
You are both correct. Good job.
Woo! Yeah. I have never played the PS2 version of Shinobi. I'm gonna download it. But I was still butthurt about the Dreamcast not being around, so I was still anti PS2 at that point. Even though Sega was making stuff for them.
Let it die. What was the sequel to Shinobi? Nightshade. Nightshade. I think
not to be confused with the NES version of Nightshade, which is a completely different game.
Right. I think Nightshade's the better one. I could be in the minority, though. But I am both. I'll fire them up.
You like gratuitous butt shots, so you would think that.
Rawr. Number four, since merging with the team previously known as AM1, what does that stand for, Sean?
Amusement Machines 1.
Yes, wow. Overwork has been renamed Sega WoW. Identify the game from the following list which has emerged from this unification. A, Blood Will Tell. B, Sonic Riders. C, Samba de Amigo. D, Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing.
I want to say Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing because I know I've seen that logo pop up and I feel like that is the one that I've played. So I'm going to say that.
Joe?
I wanted to say Jeremy Sonic Riders, but I... Yeah, I don't think that's it. D, whatever D was.
Both of you guys are saying Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing. Correct.
Oh, really?
Blood Will Tell.
I don't even know what that game is.
That was that PS2 game. Kind of sword, felt a little like Onimusha. Does that ring any bells at all? It sold probably 5 copies, and I bought 2 of them.
Nope.
Was it good?
Decent. Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing, I had to laugh because I was thinking back. We saw the sequel at E3. Sean and I were over there. And usually, you know, after the demo, they ask, hey, did you like it? This one guy just ripped it apart. Just gave a new one.
He said, didn't even ask that guy. He was some guy who was standing next to us while they gave us the walkthrough.
Yeah. And, you know, usually you say it's not for me or something like that. But, man, that guy was angry.
Yeah. And that was also the funny one because I walked by and I saw Panzer Dragoon, and basically they were showing on the big screen like the kind of overview of the map.
Yes.
And it didn't say Sega All-Star or Sega All-Stars Racing or anything on there. So I was like, oh my God, Panzer Dragoon.
Is back.
And so when we met them, they're like, what do you want to see? And I was like, I want to see that. I want to see Panzer Dragoon. And they're like, oh, so you got Sonic All-Stars Racing. I'm like, nope, what have I got?
That's awesome.
And then we raced on the Panzer Dragoon map, which basically looked like the Grand Canyon. Just a hyper.
But it had a dragon in it.
I swear there's dragons.
That was more fun than I was expecting it to be. I will give them that.
It was, bad. I wouldn't bash it. Number five, gamers who purchased The Last Story might have to thank Operation Rainfall, an energetic fan campaign, for getting the title localized. Name the two other titles that the group has advocated for a stateside release. A, Xenoblade Chronicles. B, Away Shuffle Dungeon. C, Pandora's Tower. Or D, The Legend of Heroes Trails in the Sky.
I want to say A and D.
Yeah, A definitely, and he already picked D and C. I'll just pick something to be different.
Jeremy got it. A and C, Xenoblade Chronicles and Pandora's Tower. Sorry,
thank you, Sean.
And yes. Sean, dude, Legend of Heroes.
Operation Rainfall made sense because I'm not gonna open that wound again.
Pour some salt in it, man. Okay, let's move on to... we got an interview this week.
Yeah.
I felt an emptiness in my soul that had been missing for many weeks.
Allow me to fill it with Moe Kills. Let's talk to the guy from NIS America right now. Desert Eagle here with the Undisputed Gods of Localization. Ryan, Steven, and Ayaka of NIS America are back, and I hear that they brought a Prinny with them.
I think so. Who is going to be doing the Prinny again?
That was you, Ryan. That was your cue.
I missed my cue, you guys.
Two demerits. Three. Boot it off the show. We'll be like... Anyway, before I get into games, I wanted to talk about NISA's contribution to anime, especially because I just finished up Anohana, and as I mentioned, it flushed my eye ducts thoroughly. Don't want to admit to crying, too much of a man to admit that, maybe. But anyway, I spoke to Ryan about this before, and we did have a question from JRPG Leva, L-U-V-A, and he wanted to have a look inside kind of the inner workings of your offices, and specifically wanted to know about the process in which you decide what anime to localize, and if you could kind of walk us through the developmental process.
Yeah, I mean, when we first started the anime business, I guess it was later in 2010. Well, I guess for Anime Expo in 2010, we released Toradora, and then we did Persona Trinity Soul. So that was right before I joined up. And then as soon as I joined up, one of the first cool experiences I had was the whole office got together and sat down, and we had a full day where we kind of just checked out anime, first episodes from all these available licenses that were out there. So that was kind of my first experience with it.
So, and then big master list.
Yeah. And it was stuff all across the board. I mean, we've seen a lot of ones that were picked up by other licensors later on during the screening sessions and such. But I mean, that's kind of pretty much one of the approaches that our office takes towards anime, is just in general, it's more story based or comedy driven. So that's first and foremost when we look at something. So, as of recently, we kind of dialed back the sample group a little bit and added it more towards the anime side of the office that does the localization for that. Mm-hmm. But still, it's pretty awesome. So that's kind of the overall basic approach to it. But obviously, there's so many other kind of parts to the business. But yeah.
And now, have there been any shows that perhaps you wanted to bring over, but due to, I don't know, like a licensing issue or just the sheer economics of it, maybe it wasn't feasible?
We see a lot of things that we saw. I'm sorry, I don't even know what I'm saying right now. We saw a lot of things that we would love to bring over that just, they eventually do get taken. So, I mean, couple of famous ones that were just kind of ones that were really cool that stuck out in our mind was like the Detroit Metal City. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that, but it's kind of like a death metal style band. But the guy, the lead singer, actually like wants to sing love songs and stuff. I mean, it's really awesome. It kind of has like roots in the Kiss and death metal, but also it's kind of like a comedy. So we saw that one, and then, you know, a lot of us in the office really liked it, especially the guys. And but, you know, eventually it depends. It all depends on the companies when they go out and purchasing the licensing. So there's a lot of negotiation on that side. So that's another whole part of like acquiring a title is just, you know, what's available to go along with the title, and if an art, and if it's going to be Blu-ray, if it's going to be DVD, and then like online streaming rights and merchandising rights and all these other things that kind of go along when you license an anime title. So those are kind of just all these little kind of gears that are spinning when we're trying to grab a new title. So, but I mean, ultimately, I mean, you know, to a certain extent, just general popularity on in the U.S. is definitely something we look at too. So, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's the anime business is like completely different from the gaming business, just because there's kind of, I mean, we still have to get approval for a lot of things over in Japan, but at the same time, the whole acquisition thing's a little bit different because there's like there's rights with the music, and when we try to post things on YouTube, you typically can't post our trailers on YouTube because there's rights involved with the music, and sometimes we only get the actual videogram, like the raw video footage rights versus music rights are different. So, yeah, it's definitely a completely different beast from video games, but it's still pretty awesome because it's a different fan base.
It sounds a little trickier then?
Well, at times it can be, especially with licensing things. With video games, it's a little bit easier. And we're not in our full, I guess, third year now doing the anime. And basically, we doubled the amount of titles that we had this past year.
Yeah.
So it's been a busy year. But yeah, we're slowly but surely kind of picking up within the industry. And so we're pretty stoked about it.
Okay, so speaking of anime and OVA, let me offer a transition and a question. What's going on with Black Rock Shooter, the game?
Black Rock Shooter, well, you know, I'm sure everyone's heard the news from Image Epoch's president that, you know, the game is still planning to be released here in the U.S., so, yeah, well, I just echo that. It's definitely still in the works.
Okay.
So, I mean, for the game itself, we're still planning it, so just keep your ears perked for something hopefully soon. I can't confirm anything just yet, but I know for a fact that it's getting kind of close, so.
Okay, awesome. A little optimism there.
There you go.
Don't pull that pre-order money quite yet. So next month, September 18th to be exact, is the stateside release of Mugen Souls, a title that it looks to offer a lot of the trademark kind of tenets of a compile heart game. It's got a little bit of free combat movement, you know, the super cute characters. They're kind of reminiscent of Hyper Dimension Neptunia and some of the more intricate battle systems of a game like Cross Edge. But it also has a few novelties, you know, the Moe kills and kind of the character link-ups, which are cool. So tell me a little bit more about some of the things that make this title feel distinct.
Well, I mean, for distinctness, I guess what it is it essentially they took a lot of the cool elements from Disgaea. I'm sure everyone's probably read up about it, but they took a lot of the cool elements like the art style and the ability to do, you know, billions of points of damage, and then took it off the SRP grid system and kind of put it more into like a more mainstream style RPG where, like you said, you have the kind of area of effect style roaming within a battle, and then you have the ability to kind of essentially like link things using either basically this is the toughest thing to describe without having a physical picture in front of me, but there's the crystals in the middle of the battlefield where you can actually use that to bounce the enemies off them, and then eventually once you unlock a certain mode called frenzy mode, you're actually able to bounce them around like pinballs up in the air. And so, I mean, that kind of gets the whole billions of points of damage going on. And then, like you said, with the Moe kill, that definitely has a small learning curve to it, because essentially each turn, the enemies kind of, their mood changes. So you have to switch your character or your ego to, or, you know, your trope to that certain mood, and then match the things that you're saying in the Moe to that kind of mood that they're in. And if you get that right, then you either kind of improve the ability to get your items, or the ability to make them your peon so that you could eventually be able to play as them, or you know, get them angry to get the frenzy mode going. So there's kind of a lot of different battle mechanics outside of just, you know, use a special move or kind of group this player together to do this kind of joint move, disguise style. So, again, we're pretty excited. I mean, like, from, you know, when you see it from the surface, it doesn't look like there's too much to it, but, you know, it does have some pretty in-depth stuff in it. So, but, you know, it has like, much like the item world, it has a, what's it called? Mugen Field, it's called. And essentially that's the ability to level up your items, and that kind of gives the for the more hardcore players the what's in it for me after the standard playthrough. So I mean, I talked to somebody that was in about maybe 50 or so hours in, and they were only like, you know, like 20 or 30% into Mugen Field. So you know, that offers kind of something for the Disgaea fans, and also just more for standard turn-based RPG fans. So
One of the things that I really found interesting is so many games, especially Disgaea, is just statistically driven, where everything is numbers. And the Moe kill uses language in a way that's a little bit similar, I guess, to Pokemon, where you figure out the different things. But it's really driven by you're trying to connect to, you know, the feeling. And that totally threw me, because I'm a numbers person.
You know, we even in the office, we were trying to kind of basically, I mean, there's a little face when you're playing the game. There's a little face that kind of determines the choices you make during the Moe kill. And then, you know, Nick and Alan were both the editor translator combo for that game. And it took them a while to kind of figure out, because there's seven different face types. And then basically that kind of determines which characteristic trope that you're going to use for Shushu to switch between, like, the sadist or the, you know, all those other characters. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty in-depth, and like you said, it's words rather than being a specific number or
step builder. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned seven. I got a question from Hector 14. He asks, schizophrenic main character with seven violent personalities sounds vaguely like Killer 7. So, and he asks, so guys, any similarities you know about? So any pseudo similarities that you guys are aware of?
Not so much. I know that I mean, that's taken me back a little bit, you know, but,
to the GameCube era. Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, this one is a little bit more towards, I mean, the way that I've kind of see it, then the way it plays in the story is a little bit more towards the kind of like the otaku culture in Japan, how each one of the character has that particular trope associated with, you know, tsundere. And then it's kind of more like related toward the anime world side. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting. And each one of the characters, once they're introduced in the story, always has something pretty interesting to say. So, I mean, it definitely, we were really surprised to actually get a T for teen on that one. So, believe me, there's plenty in there that, you know, aside from the things that, you know, the little mini game and the stills that we had to omit for the game. I mean, the text itself and the actual characters and what they say, and then you know, everything about the tropes hasn't been, you know, changed or omitted. So we're pretty stoked for, you know, to see everyone's reaction to the actual story. I think that's where, you know, a lot of the good meat of the game resides.
Which brings me to a question from Gamefather. He said, a lot has been said about your decision to censor the game. Why not just leave in the Hot Springs bits in there and go for the M rating?
You know, the only thing is, you know, like, I think it would just totally skip the M rating. And, you know, even if we did try that, it's still like, there's a lot of, you know, the Western culture views certain things a little bit differently. So even though the characters are 1,000 years old on paper, in the end, we just try and figure that if somebody purchases the game, or you know, somebody that's younger purchases the game, and the family comes in and says, "Hey, what are you playing?" type of thing. You know, that's kind of just one of the ways that we kind of subjectively view things. Obviously, you know, we don't want to change things in our games and remain as true as possible. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, on our forums, a lot of people have been throwing around the AO thing, and you know, essentially, if you get an adult only style game, then you know, the publishers won't pick you up at all. I mean, yeah. The game systems won't pick you up, and then essentially, you know, we're really kind of limiting the title. So in order to bring it over here, we just kind of decided that, you know, it's kind of we had to kind of make lemonade essentially. And mm-hmm. but you know, when you play the game itself, I mean, if you really wanted to check those stills out, they're obviously available on the internet. And then, you know, yeah, I mean, the game itself wasn't really necessary to propagate any stats. Mm-hmm. So, basically, you know, skippable. So it really didn't affect the game at all, sure. Gameplay-wise or stats or anything. And then the stills at the end of the game, you know, we weren't able to keep those. But after everything's said and done, we got a T for teen. So that's kind of, you know, we weren't actually aiming for that. We pretty much thought we were going to get an M, but, you know, we ended up getting the T for teen.
Well, how much did you have to pay the ESRB for that? I'm kidding.
Now, it was a total surprise, to be honest. We thought, you know, after, you know, Hyperdimension Neptunia MK2 getting an M, that, you know, it was kind of just going to be the same type of thing. But mm-hmm. I think that, yeah, you know, it ended up being okay. And even with the story, I mean, a lot of people will probably be pretty surprised that we got a T for teen with the things that are in the story. So.
Sure.
A lot of double entendre going on, so.
But you're always good. Now, one of the game's key points you mentioned is acquiring peons. Tell me about that aspect a little bit more.
Yeah, so, I mean, the whole thing is the character Shushu wants to eventually take over the universe, so you go to 7 different planets trying to take them over, and then basically during the battle, you're able to use the Moe kill mm-hmm. to eventually, you know, if there's a certain character, or basically, you know, you use the move to go ahead and basically snatch them up and make them your peon, and then that kind of adds to, you know, and when you go later to actually make them a character, they actually become part of your inventory. So mm-hmm. it's a pretty interesting kind of system to acquire new players that way, or mm-hmm. not new players, but, you know, new characters. And then, you know, on the other side, if you're doing the Moe kill and if you don't do it right, then it activates the frenzy mode, which basically angers them and mm-hmm. they're doing more damage. So that goes, learning the Moe kill is kind of like a little bit of a steeper slope for some players. But again, we'll have something on our website kind of explaining that. And then, you know, if anybody has any questions, they could always just email us too. So, mm-hmm. but yeah. I mean, the peon system is kind of a cool little thing.
Now,
so.
What percentage of the peons are voiced?
Ooh, you know what? I would have to get back to you on that one.
No ballpark figure?
Yeah, I don't have a ballpark on okay. that one. But yeah, I'll talk to Nick and I'll tell you what I, you know, if you want to add a little. Addendum.
Tell him I want a decimal point in there.
You got it.
Now, here's off the wall question. If you guys were able to capture some peons from the world of celebrity, who'd be doing your dirty work?
In the world of celebrities?
Yeah, yeah. Name some people you would Moe kill, capture, and then hop into and control.
You know what? I was just watching this video today.
I don't know like where this is going.
It's the guy who does, he's on public access, and mm-hmm. he like blends drinks. And he paints, and he like is on a treadmill while he does all three at the same time. So, and he's like constantly fielding calls from like the general public. Most of them just verbally berate him, but he really has like a really good attitude, and he just kind of keeps going with it. So,
wait,
I think
so. He paints, he runs, and he drinks alcohol.
Well, he blends drinks.
He blends drinks. Okay.
So he's kind of blending drinks, and he's on a treadmill, so he's like walking because he's talking, but he's out of breath too, and he's painting at the same time. So I don't know. I feel like he would kind of be the best balance class where he would kind of be able to get a lot of like, you know, a lot of things kind of to a certain level. Plus, you know, he'd be able to field a lot of flack. It seems right. like because half the people are just like verbally berating him. In the, you know, on public access.
The jack of all trades kind of kicks.
Exactly.
how about the rest of you guys? Some more celebrities? We got to find out. This is the first time I've heard of this gentleman.
Yeah. Well, for me, I would definitely go with Betty White.
Betty, okay.
I don't know if she'll listen to me, but I think she can fight well with other people and win.
Right. She could round up the animals.
Yes, of course, definitely.
Peons with peons.
It'll make my life so much more fun.
That's right. It'd be like Tokyo Jungle.
I just Hopefully. Saw a video for that just literally about 5 minutes ago.
Yes. Which I'm praying has poodles in it. So, Steven, your celebrity.
I would have to go with Bronson Pinchot.
Okay. Yes.
Just because I need him to keep reminding me to don't be ridiculous.
Wow, that was wonderful. The Perfect Strangers reference. That doesn't happen
on the podcast. Oh, God.
So that was good. Now, what are the – let's get serious again for a second. One of the more interesting news points was confusion with Kaji Inafune was working on the game, but it turned out to be the new Kaji Inafune, who I guess is some kind of new person. So maybe new Steve, could you give us some insight? What was going on there?
I really have no idea.
Did you guys hear about that at all?
I have not, actually.
Okay.
For which one? He's talking about Mugen Souls? Or?
Yes, Mugen Souls. There was a rumor that he was working on the game, but it turned out to be someone who kind of took his name and added new at the beginning.
Wow. No, to be brutally honest, I haven't heard that one either. I'm going to have to talk to Nick about that. Nick?
Nick, where are you?
Where's Nick?
Hey, Nick.
Yeah.
Find details. He's going to listen to this and just cry that he didn't get to speak his mind on this. So I did want to talk about some of your DLC plans for the game as well.
Yeah, I mean,
Bronson Pinchot. In the game,
we don't have Cousin Larry in the lineup this time around.
It's too expensive,
or the sweater of a thousand itches or whatever he wore. But yeah, it's we do have a bunch of DLC planned though. I mean, off the top of my head, I'd have to look at a spreadsheet to go down the run. But basically, from launch day, every week we have something planned for at least 2 months, I believe. So, yeah, we got tons of that coming out too. So, I mean,
any playables that jump off out of your mind?
To be honest, I haven't DLC. Taken a look here real quick. I'll tell you what, I will send a Skype while we're talking.
Okay.
And then we'll see what we can get out of here.
Okay.
From one of the editors.
Okay. Let's move on to Legacista, which is this week's standout release for the PSN. Can you tell me a little bit more about the title?
Well, this game is a kind of like action RPG, dungeon crawling, roguelike.
Yes.
Where
all those, all three genres.
Yeah. Because they're all very different.
Yeah.
So with this game, like the main point that's really gonna attract people is like the customizability of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this character editor where you can make your own characters and draw your own sprites and just map out exactly what your character wants, what you want your character to look like and what you want their weapons to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cannot even like export the characters so that you can touch them up in like a graphic editor on your computer or something like that and then import them back in. Mm-hmm. Or you can share them with your friends by giving them the picture files.
Okay.
And they can import your characters into their game.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Now, does that use templates? I saw a brief video for that, and I can't draw stick figures. And does that use any kind of templates like circles, heads, faces, things like that?
Yeah, when you make them, there's going to be a couple, I think there's 6 or 7 templates you can choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Like right away, and then you can go into the edit mode feature, and from there you can copy like the main characters. Pretty much, you can copy their pixels,
mm-hmm.
put them on there, and you can like mix and match like with their arms or heads of different characters and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there should be a couple NIS character cameos that you can.
Yeah, dude.
Use
there he is
for some of your characters. Most of them will be like Disgaea series based characters. So you can create them in the game using the create a character thing, because you get to name them and everything like that.
Yeah.
And then use the skins to fill them out.
Okay. Very, very cool. Now, early reports have compared the game to other System Prisma's offerings, you know, the Clay Dunn and the sequel X2. Can you tell me more about the similarities? Because I personally really enjoyed those games and hooked a number of people on them.
Well, they retained the Ranjin, the random dungeon feature.
Yes.
So it's a good place to pretty much farm out new equipment that's better and to level up your characters. Because usually you'll get better drops and more experience than in the story dungeons.
And for Lego Sista, you can actually switch out your characters. You can have up to 3 characters, and you can switch them out whenever you want.
Okay.
So, you know, you get to build your own strategy more.
Okay. So displaces the magic circle?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So you have 3 at any one time, and you can switch those out. Okay, very cool.
Yeah, and you can also have your support characters, like the 2 other ones. They can also cast some of their magic while they're in support, so they don't have to risk being killed while they still help out your main character.
Okay, sounds cool. Now, tell me about bringing this stateside. Were any, you know, major edits, or was it a fairly easy process, the translation process?
The translation was pretty easy. The storyline's really cute, simple, but yeah.
Yeah, because this one's not like total reference heavy like most of the other games that we handle.
Yeah.
It was very straightforward.
Yeah, so it's kind of lighthearted and funny, but it's not the usual kind of stuff that we deal with. So it was a lot easier to handle the localization of it.
Very cool. So it's full of whimsy.
Yes.
I would want to quote the quotient on the whimsy with the decimal on that one. 0.99 on that one. Well, thank you, guys. Once again, September 18th, Mugen Souls, and then Lego Sista, which is out this week on PSN. And can you give me the price on that?
Yeah, it's $29.99, and that's tomorrow. Yeah, it should be available once PSN updates, you know, by 4 p.m. Pacific. So, yeah, we're pretty stoked about that. Hey, I actually got a spreadsheet. Ready for here, Mugen Souls. So yeah. I've got a rundown of some good stuff.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
So basically, I mean, from the beginning, we have a bunch of free stuff planned. So one called Jiggly Transmission and Equipment Packs. So those are going to be free. So they're pretty much within the first couple weeks of launch. And then there's the Point Pack and a G-Up Pack. So basically, you know, they'll be kind of kind of raise your cap on different things. And then, let's see, going down, let's see, later on, some of the ones that really stood out to me would be Unlock All Voices. That's a paid one. And then Unlock All Physical Parts. So, I mean, obviously, there's probably a lot of extra stuff that's in there and a few other packs. And then, let's see, there's one called the G Up Fever Pack. That one sounds interesting. I'm not sure exactly what that one is was in that one. And then there's the Overwhelming Goth Lolly set. That one also
purchased
coming out.
Right.
And then lastly, the First Generation Bride set. So I mean, these are all things basically planned within the first couple months of release. So again, it was a bunch of free stuff, so I'm pretty stoked about that. And then, yeah, more news on that. And then basically within a couple of weeks, we'll have it all posted on our website. So you just check out nsamerica.com, and then under the Games tab, you can check out the Mugen Souls. There'll be a little DLC button, and then basically the whole schedule should be posted there. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Cool.
Sounds good. Win for that Goth Lolly set.
Me too. I'm ready.
Me too. I got my money just hedged away over there. Ready to go. Okay, guys, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much,
Robert.
That was gross. I cannot believe you guys said that. They are children, Robert. Children.
We got the explicit tag, so.
Moe mode engaged.
Time to disengage and put the pants back on, Jeremy. Time to move on over to the mailbag. We got some questions here. Digo, a.k.a. Gunmetal Jackal, asks, any of you cool cats putting down cash or are considering the oh yeah?
Ooh yeah.
The ooh yeah.
Ooh yeah.
They say in French.
Ooh yeah. Lou yeah.
We are.
Oh, we are, I see.
Yeah, we are. So, Jeremy.
I am not really, at least in this situation, I'm not really much of a, patron of, possibly bringing something like this out. So I'm waiting until they can show me the actual proof of concept. Okay. Then I'll get on board with it. So I'm considering it. I guess you could put me in the considering camp. Mm-hmm. Then again, I mean, there are services that I don't use now that are totally, I can have them for free, like, Desura and things like that. I only just recently even downloaded Origin, EA service. So, at some point I feel like if I'm ever going to adopt a system, I should probably just do it right up front. So maybe I should get on board the Ouya train, sure. But I'm kind of waiting to see what happens with it.
I'm the same way, and I feel kind of the same way, even though I've seen and played a couple of the Wii U games. I just haven't got a feel for the software, so I'll probably wait, for it. And I don't know. I think a $99 console, I'm in a position where I shouldn't have to think about it too much when it comes out. So I'm on the fence.
Did you say you saw him play Wii U games on it?
No. Similar to the Wii U.
I see. I'm the same.
I've played some of the games, but I just don't have enough of a feel. Maybe there isn't that killer app for me to really push me over the edge and say, I gotta buy the hardware just to play this game.
Yeah, I am probably more interested to see. This would be the question: are you more interested in the Wii U or the Ouya?
Ooh, that is a tough one. Probably Wii.
Wait, I have a question.
Yes.
Okay.
So they have these Android mini computers with USB inputs.
Yes.
And they're only $70. Why not just do that instead of Ouya? I don't have to wait for that.
Because it's hackable.
So any Android device is hackable. That's my thing. Is like people are like, oh, I'm gonna get this to be a Super Nintendo. It's like, well, I can get one of these Android mini computers the size of a pack of cigarettes. It's got an HDMI out and a USB out. I just put it on my computer. Put it on my TV. I've got a Saturn controller that's USB. I just plug that in and go.
I'll be honest. For me, that whole thing about like, oh, it's hackable, like that's a bullet point. To me, that was always the most questionable thing because of exactly that. I'm like, well, you can do that stuff already with all of your mad hacks if you want to. But I mean, they're trying to create an ecosystem here that is, indie friendly. And, they were always talking about get these small games on a TV, get it on a TV, They kept talking about it. So I could see that, making a place that is like an app store. But my concern was always about the curation. Like, is it going to be just this giant pile like the iPhone store or like the Android marketplace? I'm okay with it, but I just kind of want to wait and see what they actually come out with.
I've dropped about 300 on Kickstarter and haven't really seen much.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And so I'm really kind of hesitant towards, pushing anything forward. So,
which, I don't think that's, I don't think we expect it a whole lot different. I mean, maybe some rewards kind of trickle out, but I mean, it's kind of a long-term, development cycle for a lot of this stuff, unless you're talking about board games that you can crank out in 6 months.
Sure.
This stuff is long-term, three years. So,
except for that watch I got suckered on.
Good job.
Everybody got suckered on that watch. What was the deal with that? Why were people so excited about it?
I don't know. It was like a little Tamagotchi or something that you could clip onto your wrist and you could like program it. It's like an LCD thing. I don't know
if it did have a Tamagotchi in there. That would be pretty awesome.
System seller.
I want to spank the dog. Okay, JRPG lover says, scenario, you can give a design team 5 non-specific items you want in a game. What are they?
I think a lot about, I think I've mentioned before that I watch a lot of, you know, developer talks at GDC about, you know, design concepts and things that make games fun or not fun. And I think about this a lot. And I think that, I mean, these, you know, non-specific, I guess I get really broad with it, but yeah. I think abstraction, being able to take something that would normally be a tedious task and abstract it into something that is, you know, saves time, or, you know, something where you can engage in a complex system relatively easily. Okay. So that's something, I guess that's probably super vague, but abstract,
no,
one
sense.
Thing.
No.
I always find personally, well, and then there's another broad concept of risk reward. So,
yeah.
So there's got to be kind of an element of, you know, I've got to, you know, potentially put things on the line in order to get awesomeness. Scarcity is kind of another thing. I think that might be a little bit more, you know, to maybe survival horror or something. But I think if you overload people with things like collectathons or things like that, I think having a something that's based on scarcity, where the stuff that you do, you know, the items that you get or the encounters that you have are more meaningful the fewer that there are of them.
And then sell the other ones later.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even loot, you know, I mean, right. There's ways to do scarcity. I mean, it doesn't mean that never have anything, but the really awesome things, you want those to be scarce. Personally, one thing that I always found in games that was really like an awesome thing for me is the concept of enemy conscription. So if there are bad guys that you're like really afraid of, but you can have under certain circumstances get bad guys on your team to fight against other bad guys, like I always find that to be an awesome, like, yeah, like a really great moment when you can do that. And so that's what, four things. And Super Mario.
Just not regular, but the big one.
Non-specific, but Mario.
Yeah, no. Maybe some electricity shooting through my arm hairs would be my last one.
Or some other orifice.
Yeah.
I would say we talked about earlier level editor, some kind of online sharing, I think was good. Non-linear design, something that's not, doesn't push you down a hallway. I know I liked, you know, Final Fantasy 13, but I don't want to really see or experience, you know, something similar to that. I find I enjoy myself when given a little bit more freedom. I think one thing is characters that I maybe not so much identify with, but I care about. And sometimes I feel like I don't care about characters, you know, in a game very much. I feel like a passive observer sometimes. DLC, I think free DLC would be good. I remember when, who was that? Who put out like Unreal?
Epic
for PS3, they brought out, you know, a bunch of like free stuff, and there was a time when DLC, you know, on PC used to be free and stuff like that, and on console before they realized they could monetize it, and that was really cool because the whole idea was that, hey, they could extend the life of this. And then
what I was about to say, it's not so much about the monetization, it's about the timing. I feel like people forget that the goal of DLC should be to keep you playing a game. And I feel like the industry has moved more towards, and I brought this up a bunch of times, the next event, and the next event is always a new game. So they don't want you playing the same game for too long because they want you to get the next one. But I would enjoy it if, and I don't mean to bring it back to the Capcom, but this is what I said when Street Fighter Cross Capcom came out. I would have liked to see those characters come out in two character bundles every 2 weeks or every month, rather than just, just to keep me interested in that game.
You know what did that really well was DOA on the 3DS. The characters or outfits were offered free as long as you had, you know, your spot pass turned on. And that kind of, I know, kept me and I think is Blue as well kind of hooked.
But you had to pay for the Blue jiggle.
Right? No, jiggle's free.
That jiggle's free. Oh, great.
Yeah, the jiggle was nice bonus.
I like it. I like it when developers want me to come back to their game.
Yeah.
You know?
How many was that? Four, five? One last one is a game mechanic that offers multiple solutions. And there's probably a reason why I don't play or I enjoy a lot of puzzle games. And that's because, you know, a square peg in the square hole. And I want to be able to, you know, kind of articulate and do different things. Maybe that's why I don't like adventure games very much, or at least the old adventure games where there was a very deliberate solution, because I want more, you know, kind of creative thinking on the spot.
That's not always true.
No, not always. And I think it's changing.
And you have terrible taste if you don't like old adventure games.
I have
calling. I'm calling you out. Terrible taste. You like too many penguins, not enough adventure games.
They're not penguins. That's true. Okay, Sean, let's hear your five.
Think up five? I want long-term persistence, and that might just be because I've been playing Shining Force 3, but I like the idea that things that I do in one game affect an entirely different game, sort of similar to Mass Effect. But I also want...
Mass Effect idealism.
Well, yeah, but I also want mixed medium within that. So I want to be able to play, you know, a strategy game and then play a shooter and then play a Sim City sort of game and have the decisions I make in each one of those affect each other. Sort of like, I don't know if this is actually the way it works, but I remember when SimCopter came out, people telling me that the idea was you could build a city in SimCity 2000 and then fly through it in SimCopter.
Right. Yeah.
I like that sort of idea of the things I do in one game mixing to another one.
I do too, but I think sometimes they use it as a sales point, and I'm going to point the finger at EA, where you take your, you know, your high school player, you put him through college in NCAA, and then he's ready to be drafted in Madden. And it's just a little too convenient to kind of push it through. But I like what you're saying, Sean, as long as it's not used just to kind of push another game purchase on players.
You just want Moe kills and dust, right? That's what you really want.
That's what I want.
That's what you're saying.
But I mean, I think isn't that the idea of Mass Effect? What if you create a universe, like the Mass Effect universe? Or we'll use Star Wars, because that's one that would work with it really well. Mm-hmm. And you have this one storyline, and that goes alongside another storyline of a completely different type of game. You know, you play TIE Fighter, and one of the missions in TIE Fighter can go one of two ways, and that affects the story of this third-person shooter where you're Jedi... Joe Buddy.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be cool. And yeah, it would force you to buy multiple games, or you don't have to, because who cares what happened in TIE Fighter?
You know what? I realized it's not going to happen because people like to, you know, reuse code, and that's the cheaper way to go. So, yeah. You probably, you know, sequelitis.
Hey, can I tell you an adventure game that lets you do multiple solutions to lots of different puzzles and also lets you carry content from one game to the next?
Wow.
Quest for Glory series. They started in like 1988, 1989, and you can get it on GOG.com, Quest for Glory 1 through 5 for $10. Highly recommend. It is Sierra, and it is one of my favorite. It is probably, let me think about this, it is my favorite game series of ever.
That is the only one of the Quest series that I haven't played, and everybody tells me it's the best.
It's so good. You know what I haven't done and I'd really like to is the little indie people who are doing kind of the remakes of the Quest for Glory 2 and that. I haven't played those, and I'd really like to. The sad thing is I'll probably live and die without ever playing those again, but I can at least hold the memories dear in my heart.
Have you played, not Tex Avery, Tex Murphy?
Tex Murphy? No, but I heard a great interview with, I can't remember what show he was on, but with the guy, because they used to be based here in Salt Lake. They used to do the Lynx from Access Software.
Yeah,
used to do the Lynx games.
Oh, I used to like those.
And, yeah. So that's, and I think they got the same guy to do I think they're doing a new Kickstarter, some series from
yes,
them.
And
actually that guy.
There.
Yeah, and that guy
actually
was actually
making a new Tex. They're making a new Tex Avery. That's what the Kickstarter's for.
Tex Murphy.
Or Tex Murphy. Tex Avery was the animator.
The animator.
Yeah.
And Leisure Suit Larry. Need to bring him back.
They also had a Kickstarter for that.
They're doing it, really? It turns out, yeah.
Just not an action game. So where were you, Sean? Did you give us five yet?
I don't know. The rest of them. I would...
And he wants something that'll control his hands so that he doesn't have to blame himself when he, you know,
exactly.
Wash the guilt away.
Yeah.
I want to be able to put those gloves on and then put my hands on a controller and then have it play games for me.
That'd be awesome.
Okay. Should we do the next question or no?
Yeah, that was that was a really good question, JRPG Level. That was a good one. Let's give JRPG Level one more question.
Okay. Cross-eyed girls like Lucy Liu, hot or not? That's the big question.
Cross-eyed girls?
Yes.
You know, the wife on Grimm has... she's lazy-eyed, and it bugs me.
How can you even watch that show, Sean?
If it's up to me, we don't watch any shows. But girl, well, I will say, I admit that I'm super into Dark Shadows right now. But
okay.
No, my girlfriend picks TV, and I veg out. But she really likes Grimm, and...
I tried watching about 10 minutes, and I was just like, no, I can't hang.
I mean, it's schlocky. But whatever. Like I said, that TV watching is completely her domain. I would rather be doing something else. But we spend time together, and that's how we do it. So I don't really care what we do.
I build castles on graph paper. Why she's doing that. Okay, so lady from Grimm.
Cross-eyed girls like Lucy Liu. Is that a statement or a... I find that a little bit hot, if cross-eyed girls like Lucy Liu.
I didn't know she was cross-eyed. I don't really think of that when I think of her.
I don't think that either. That might be kind of mean. But I will say cross-eyed girls, no. Lazy-eyed girls, hell yes.
Yeah. Guess I'm with you, Jeremy, on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird thing, but we won't get into the analysis. Instead, if you liked what you heard today, lazy-eyed or cross-eyed, why not check out what we write? Point your browser to www.techgaming.com for the latest reviews, previews, and all your new release info. If you like our opinions on gaming, chances are you might like something else we might say on Twitter, mildly amusing. I'm Robert Allen, at tech_gaming. With me is Sean Kirkland. He is at Sean Nola. Not with us tonight, Sage Morris Green. What was she doing? Trying out for a black belt at Samurage. And then we got Blue Swim, who is... had a dinner party. He is at Blue Swim. Jeremy Lawman Lamont. Of course, you can find him at Jeremy_LA MONT. Even though Twitter is not case specific.
If you forget the capital M, I'll never forgive you.
Or at least reply. And speaking of forgiveness, if you don't subscribe to the Tech Gaming Podcast on iTunes, we may not forgive you. So just click on the link in show notes. And if you like what you hear, please give us a rating. And then also, one reminder is to like us on Facebook.
And you guys have been doing a lot of that lately.
Hmm?
Yeah, they've been liking us on Facebook. I just wanted to remind you, don't forget the contest. The code for Dust and Elysian Tail. I think it was, what was it? Leave a comment in the notes, I think you said.
Yeah, just leave a comment about the game.
All right, comment
and
about
And if you're
Dust.
Interested in getting Humble Hearts on the show, let me know and perhaps leave a question. We'll try to get it answered in a future interview.
Awesome.
Are we going to get all of the Humble Hearts or just the one guy?
He actually has
two hearts.
Right. It's the dichotomy, the good and evil one.
He actually has three hearts, but only two of them are humble. We don't talk about the other one.
Right.
Braggart.
I hope he didn't listen to this and hear all the things I said about furries. I'm really okay with furries.
Yeah, we know you are.
Yes.
a little too much.
Yeah. Sorry I was a grumpus, everybody.
What are you talking about? You weren't.
It's been a rough couple of weeks.
I was the grump tonight. I was critical. I was dismissive of arcades making a comeback. And it's only because I'm bitter that they took my wonderful spaces away from me.